Jay Rockefeller is an establishment liberal. In other words, he's rich enough to be liberal when it suits him. But he's all very much wrapped up in the national security state, and, you know, he's never seen a mountain that he didn't want blown up unless it was near his cabin in Pocahontas County. You can imagine what a cabin for a Rockefeller is like.
Right.
And
out with something the other day, and now I can't remember what it was, but it really irritated the heck out of me. He made some. Oh yeah, he did the. He came out with a thing. I guess he got up with the commission with the FCC and made some statements on about News Corp, Fox News, and also did the equalization with the MSNBC and said some things like, if you guys don't get your act together, we're going to get you.
Oh yeah, yeah, I saw that. Rockefeller saying that that. Well, basically, he was spreading Jon Stewart's false equivalence, that MSNBC and Fox are the same.
Exactly. I was wondering what planet he was on, man. Just wondering what planet he was on. If you just turn on the radio, Mr. Rockefeller, and if you want to get blitzed with just pure fascism on almost every other station, and you will never, and in most parts of this country, the vast majority, 90% of this country, you won't hear a progressive word on that radio dial whatsoever. I don't know where he's coming from. I really don't.
Well, again, he's in D.C. He doesn't have to pay attention to what goes on, you know, here in West Virginia.
Right.
The only time he hears radio in West Virginia is when he's being interviewed by Hoppy Kirchival, who is a the shameless right-winger.
Right.
Who is in the pay of John Racy, by the way.
You know, just another thing I want to mention, too, is they had an election in Oakland, California, nearby where I am. And they had a career Democrat who had raised a lot of money and had a lot of name recognition running against a local city councilwoman. And there were a couple people in the race, so it watered down the results quite a bit. But they used, for the first time in Oakland, they've been doing this in San Francisco, they used IRV voting.
Instant runoff, yeah.
Exactly. And this woman, this guy Don Parada, who had been the perennial, I think he was head of the Senate and the legislature for a long time, perennial Democrat who had great name recognition, a lot of corporate money, and had always been a corporatist, had won just with the first round of voting. But this woman, Jean Kwan, won with the residual votes that they counted, the second and third place. And she took the lead, and she won by 4%. And she's much more progressive, much more, you know, down to the earth, a person of the people, and much more environmentally, and mainly that's where she got her start. She's an environmentalist. So there is hope. If we could get IRV voting in a lot of other places in this country, that is hope to take out incumbents who have the name recognition and have the money. So just a thought.
Oh, I think it would work. Well, it works the world over. I mean, I remember one night when John Fox was talking, that's basically what he's got in Australia.
Oh, that's great. So that allows you to actually vote against somebody, too. Because if you don't want somebody, like with me, there's almost all the time I do not want the Republican in there. So you can put, you know, all votes on the other, and you can vote for a Green Party candidate who you don't think might win, but at least you can get that second vote to the Democrat.
Right. And that involves a lot less nose-holding, too.
Right, and it really gives you the...
In other words, it works, so the chances of it ever happening, Andy, are approaching nil.
Well, it is. It's happening in California, but...
Yeah, but I mean, I would love to... Shoot, it took, 10 years to get a pilot program for clean elections going here for, like, two races.
Right.
I mean, these people are not going to go for something like that, in large part because the people passing the law that would allow it to happen... are people who know that their bacon would be in the fire if it did.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, it's like asking the fox to quit the hen house. Or the weasel.
Right. Well, that's why it's got to be driven from the ground up. It's got to be a grassroots effort. No, one other comment I was thinking, too, I wanted to say is that you talked about that, and you actually read an email that I sent about George Soros and Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, too, you know, Warren Buffett with this whole thing with Goldman Sachs, recently with them getting into trouble with the mortgage-backed securities and lying about this guy, John Paulson, who actually set up the mortgage-backed securities, and then they sold this stuff anyway, although, as Carl Levin kept calling it, on and on, you know, what it was, the S ending with the T, type of junk that they were selling to customers, even though they knew it was going to blow up and they knew it was bad. But Warren Buffett has been an avid backer of Goldman Sachs and Lloyd Blankfein, the CEO over there. That's another thing that Buffett has really irritated the hell over.
And yet he came out today, or in the last day or so, and said the tax rates on his class need to be appreciably higher.
Tax the rich. But, you know, that should be obvious. That should be so obvious. When they used to be 91% tax rates during the Eisenhower era, after the first 3 million, and when Kennedy was in office, yeah, he brought it down. He brought it down to 71%.
Right.
Big deal. 71% it was when Kennedy was in office, for God's sake.
Yeah, from what, 92% under Eisenhower?
Yeah, 91, I think, to be exact. But anyway, and then Reagan brings it down to 28 at one point.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention a couple of emails that rolled in on this topic. After the show was over, and we'd Friday, and we'd had the back and forth over George Soros, Sandra wrote back in, and she said, "I accept the corrections concerning my comments about Soros, and there's no doubt that Soros was a supporter of the democratization process that occurred in Eastern Europe. But it should be noted Soros was the primary financial backer of Jeffrey Sachs, the neoliberal economist at the time who implemented the economic shock therapy in Poland and the former Soviet Union. Soros has since had a change of heart about the value of economic shock therapy to emerging democracies, but this change came too late for Poland and Russia, where Soros profited directly from the new markets he helped to create." And she closes and says, "I think it's great Soros supports progressive causes, but no one gets that rich without stepping on folks."
Well, there's no question about that, and I can't deny that. I know Sandra is definitely correct. Poland did go through an economic shock therapy. And even today, they don't really get it, that corporations have to be reined in. They have to be regulated and controlled. And I noticed that there's really no freedom of speech in Poland to talk against corporations. You can get your ass put in jail, and you can get sued really bad.
Yeah, well, it's reminiscent. I remember reading something about that, and I thought it was kind of reminiscent of the way they use the draconian defamation laws in Singapore.
Yeah, and they're doing that in Poland. They really let the corporations run roughshod over the average person and consumers. And
you mentioned Reagan and the 28%, Andy. Ron in Raleigh said, "Remember the top tax rate that Ronnie Reagan and David Stockman put into effect was 28%? Ron says, "Does anyone recall the recession that followed? You know as well as I do that a 0% tax rate will bring in all kinds of revenue because you just can't cut taxes enough." And he's
that's a total joke, a total fallacy.
But they get away with it because they're treated like these right wing cut the taxes types are like. You know, the guy who's nine beers into his 12-pack and wants to tell you about the night that the aliens gave him his anal probe. You know, we don't take that guy seriously, but the stuff that these clowns are talking about with cutting taxes is on the same level as I got probed by the aliens, but because they dress in nice suits and we put them on TV, we act like they actually have something valid to offer to the discussion, when in fact they don't.
Now, the fact of the matter is, when you lower taxes, you incentivize people to speculate and to use money unwisely and to send it overseas or to try to make a fast buck. If you keep taxes high, they're going to reinvest it in the business. They're not going to take it as income. They're not going to take it in salary or in bonuses. They're going to roll it back into the business and grow the country. And that's what higher taxes will do. Higher taxes will grow the economy, will increase the GDP, because you're rolling it back into the business.
Well, God Almighty, Andy, with just the modest tax increases that came through under Bill Clinton, didn't the rich get vastly more rich? I mean, it actually served to benefit them.
There's no doubt. Even during the Clinton era, from like 1992 to 2000, the top 1% gained 10% every year more in wealth, and the bottom 99% only gained like 2%. It was better than the 1% under Bush gains that they had, but the bottom 90% only gained 2% compared to 10%, you know, for the top 1%. So even during the Clinton era, yeah, it helped a little, even that, you know, up higher taxes at the 39% bracket, top bracket, helped the lower classes, the bottom 99%. Some, but still wasn't, it wasn't a fun time. It's still the rich went crazy when Clinton was in there too.
Yeah. Remember the Arkansas Project? Richard Mellon Scaife?
Right, do Mr. Clinton in. Go after Whitewater, right?
Yeah. Stunning.
Well, that's the fascist way. The fascist way is always attack the character, attack the person, and make them irrelevant as a voice. The same thing with Elliot Spitzer. You know, here's a guy that was doing Wall Street in. He was making life miserable for those bastards, and they had to kill his character. Kill him. Knock it out.
Take him out. Exactly. Right. Andy, good hearing from you, brother.
You too. All right, take care of yourself. Have a nice Thanksgiving, and all the people in the Horn have a great Thanksgiving.
Thanks, and you too, Andy.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye now. Andy calling from California, and Ron writing back. He says, did you say probe? I take anal probing very seriously, and so should we all, considering we're about to receive a monumental anal probing. Ain't that the truth? They call it the Cat Food Commission, but maybe, I don't know, maybe we should be playing the Close Encounters theme as well. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Gareth out here in Bucks County.
Hey, Gareth. How are you?
Good. You know, I was just thinking, I didn't realize that today was the Kennedy anniversary until I got home. And I was thinking about it because these creepy, extreme, I think you call them right-wingers. I don't know what the name is anymore, but they've been around for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And my dad has the most disturbing memory of the Kennedy assassination. I wasn't born yet, but he was in Philadelphia working at the Franklin Institute.
Mm-hmm.
His first job as a material scientist. And I never forgot this, and I always think about it every time the anniversary comes up. He said, you know, it was lunchtime, I think, out east when everyone heard. They're all at the lunch at the cafeteria. And they heard the news. You know, my dad just put his hands in his face, you know, or face in his hands. About 10 of these right-wing weirdos he worked with got up and clapped when they heard. That's my father's memory of the Kennedy assassination. Now, when I heard that, I said, these must be the same people who are now, their sons and daughters, you know, who are members of this extreme wing of the Tea Party. You know what I'm saying? But these people have been around for
right.
a while.
Right, and I think you're pointing to something. Pointing to something very valuable here, Gareth, and that is they pass this stuff along generationally.
That's it.
You know, when the Republicans got outvoted and Social Security was created, they huddled up and they said, someday we'll kill it. And they told their sons.
Yep.
And their sons
yep.
told their sons, and their sons told their sons. And it has burned like a little... like a little core nugget of white hot inspiration inside the beating breast of the hard right wing that someday they'll kill all these social programs and they'll have that money where it belongs, in their pockets.
And you're not even shocked to hear that a bunch of people clapped when Kennedy was killed, are you?
No.
Okay. I was when he told me that.
Well, I mean, it's shocking to the conscience insofar as it's sickening, Gareth, but, you know, again, I'm a guy from the Deep South. Mm-hmm. I was born and raised there. I remember my neighbor's daddy whooping it up the day that they announced that Dr. King had been murdered.
They hang on to things. They hang on for a long time to their prejudices and their hate.
Well, it's not so much that they hang on to it. It's all they have, Gareth.
I mean, it's like Shelby Foote. You know who Shelby Foote?
Yeah.
From the Civil War series?
Yeah.
One of my favorite quotes from there was he, he was down south visiting Nathan Bedford Forrest's great-granddaughter or something, and she gave him the opportunity to wield his saber over his head, you know, which is a big thrill for him.
Sure.
And he goes, he says to the great-grandma, the great-granddaughter, you know, I think there are two authentic geniuses during the war, you know, your great-granddad, Nathan Bedford, and Abraham Lincoln. And she puts her head down. Oh, don't include that Abraham in there, you know. This is 1960s.
Yeah. No, look, when I was starting out in elementary school, we're talking about 1969, 1970, there were still teachers in my elementary school who referred to the War of Northern Aggression.
Yeah, still. It was all about the control of northern banks on the South. I hear that one, too.
Didn't have nothing to do with slavery. It was all about economics.
Yeah, so these, it just doesn't, I mean, you know, Vicksburg, Mississippi did not celebrate July 4th until 1938.
Yeah.
You know, so this just doesn't seem to completely disappear. And when I heard that Kennedy story, I thought to myself, that's 47 years ago. That's not too long ago. And the resurrection is happening now with these guys. But Kennedy knew how to deflate those people pretty well. I think Obama could learn a thing or two from Kennedy.
But I don't know if he wants to deflate them.
I know, but here's the thing. Like, I'll never forget that great press conference where one of the reporters stood up and said, Mr. President, the Republican National Committee has recently adopted a resolution to have you basically qualified as pretty much a failure. And Kennedy just calmly turns to him and says, I'm sure it passed unanimously. You know, and everyone laughed. You know, he just knew how to disarm these people.
Part of that was because he knew he knew who he was dealing with.
Right. And he knew that, I don't know what would have happened with him in Congress if he had lived, but because the Goldwater people were on the march. Don't you get that feeling that they were going to, the early Reaganites were coming up then?
Well, no, because the right-wing transformation only takes place after Goldwater gets stomped in 64.
Stomped badly.
And that is when they hunkered down and said never again, and they got serious about building their infrastructure. It began with direct mail and was followed up shortly thereafter. 1972 is when the Powell memo comes along, and right-wing moneyed interests are told, listen, you suckers, dig deep, dig hard, give till it hurts. We're going to set up an infrastructure that will completely control the messaging in this country. And the next thing you know, just like mushrooms after a spring rain, here comes the Cato Institute and the Heritage Foundation and the American Enterprise Institute and the Competitive Enterprise Institute and on and on and on and on.
The family. Don't forget the family, as they're called.
Well, sure.
They're the creepiest. But the Goldwater, I always thought the Goldwater thing, you know, I mean...
You know, Kennedy would have stomped Goldwater, too.
You think so? Even with... you know what? Would Kennedy have put out that Daisy ad? You know, that thing?
No, but that thing only aired once.
Yeah, but I think it was damn effective, you know, based on what I've heard.
Well, the outcry of, you know, this isn't fair. You know, that's what the right wing always does when you catch them with their pants down.
Right.
It's not fair. And then they run more sleaze against us. But when we say it's not fair, they say, eat it and smile.
Right. I mean, I don't think I'm the first independent who's called you disappointed with their Obama vote, am I?
No, and you're certainly not, and God knows there's jillions of Democrats who are disappointed with their Obama vote, too.
Yeah, I can sense this is a strange sense in the last month listening to your show. I haven't heard too many independents, but there's a strange sense of Democrats coming out of the closet on this, you know?
Well, I mean...
It's kind of uncomfortable to listen to. All of a sudden they're saying, oh, gosh, where's our president? I keep hearing that over and over now. And,
well, this is not the guy that we thought we were electing?
No. The talk of hope and change, the hope and change speeches seem like a long, long time ago.
And a completely different guy, too.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really heard what you... I've been away for a little while. I haven't heard... What's your stance right now on Obama?
I'm pretty much disappointed.
Okay.
I would like for... As Bart Kopp says, I would like for him to come to work. But let me ask you, I mean, you're disappointed with your independent Obama vote, but by the same token, do you really, really, Garrett, do you think it would have...
Oh,
do you wish you had voted for McCain and Palin?
No, the Palin thing, look, I haven't... I think the only time I would have voted Republican would have been the first time Reagan was in, but I was 14 at the time. That's probably the only time I think I may have voted Republican, but not since then. A couple times locally because of guys who were looking after the farms around here, but that's about it.
And see, I know what's going to happen in 2012. I'm going to vote for Obama again.
Based on what the alternatives are.
Right. Based on the political hold-your-nose theory. And that's a crappy way to do politics.
But again, it's a serious... I wish the Kennedy thing was the bits of humor about just about everything. Like, I never... That would help Obama if he could... He's not as good off the cuff as I thought he might be.
No, he's... Well, he might be good off the cuff, but the thing is, he is so measured and so constrained and so roped in by his handlers... Because everything they do, Gareth, they do because they're wondering first, well, if he says this, what will the right wing say? If he says that, how many times will it be twisted on by Glenn Beck? I mean, think about the Shirley Sherrod affair. They preemptively canned a woman based upon a lie because they were afraid of what Glenn Beck would say.
Glenn, I can't believe people care what that guy has to say with his puppets, you know. He's gone completely off the deep end, and people are even more...
But you're rational. You're intelligent, Gareth.
Yeah, I have a math degree, so I have to be logical. You know?
Right, but see, his viewers don't. And look at there, he's using the puppets. I like puppets.
He has a Soros puppet, right? Is that what he has?
Yeah, but John Stewart did a beautiful job eviscerating that.
He did the whole thing with the glasses. And the
yeah, it was gorgeous.
Yeah, but the thing, back to the Kennedy thing, I just want to mention, he even dealt with the deficit at one of those Thai dinners, you know, they had those, I don't know, maybe newspapers or something. He was saying, okay, we have to pay off what our predecessors left behind. We can't do it in 100 days, maybe not in 1,000 days, maybe not even in the lifetime of this administration, not even, you know, in our lifetime on this planet, but it's time to get started, you know. And everyone laughed. He just dealt with it, again, in a humorous way. And I haven't really... Maybe it's maybe when we entered the $1 trillion range, it wasn't as humorous anymore. Because back then, what was it, in the billions maybe? The debt?
Yeah.
That was just early Vietnam debt. And I've heard the last time we were balanced was Andrew Jackson. Is that true? Like Andrew Jackson?
I'm not entirely certain.
1830-something. And we even...
But see, one of the things that the right wing promulgates very effectively that is a total flippin' lie is that a governmental budget is the same as a household budget. They're not. They're not.
Right.
You can't run a government absent debt. You can't, you know, pay as you go and all of that stuff. It's a nice thing to say, but ultimately you're still running on debt. And the world's been running on debt since, you know, Jesus, the 16th century, the 14th century maybe?
Mm-hmm. And they say...
But it's what you do with the debt.
And they keep passing on this mythology that the Republicans will put in an ex-businessman to take care of the whole problem. Well, the whole point is a businessman's job is to look after profits and shareholders, and the president is supposed to look after the people in two different...
Well, there you go. I mean, let's remember when he was running for office in 2000, dim leader said, I think we need to run the government like a business, like Enron. And you know what? He did. He did. Hey, Gareth, I got to run along, but it's been a great conversation.
Yeah, I'll talk to you next week.
All right, take care. Happy Thanksgiving. Gareth calling from PA and onward. And no. And no. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, I called because Andy mentioned Don Parada. I just wanted to say that fool was carjacked a few years ago.
Really?
Yeah, he was carjacked. I mean, he's really slimy, kind of. What happens in California, your term limit out, and so these career politicians just roll from one office to the next. So he had termed out. That's why he was running for that council position.
Right.
They never go away. That's the thing. I was like, oh, no. And the fact that he lost, I don't know. I thought that was kind of funny. But I remember him because he was, like, carjacked. And it was really, you know, I mean, someone put a gun to his head and said, get out, and took his car. Anyway.
He survived, just lost the car, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I wouldn't be, making fun if he was dead, if he got hurt. No, he was fine. I just was more sort of, he's just one of those sort of career politicians. I mean, I think it's quite amusing that he didn't get that seat. Anyway, I forgot what I was going to ask you. Good Lord. Oh, right, the Irish scanner. What do you think of, isn't that outrageous?
Well, I think Reverbo nailed it. It's another step toward Blade Runner.
Well, it's just, I mean, the thing is, once again, all this stuff that's happening to people who just happen to get arrested. You notice that. I mean, being arrested these days could mean any damn thing. So basically, any exposure to the pigs, you have to turn over every, you know, they're cataloging.
Yeah, let's swab your cheek, take your picture, yeah. Roll your fingers, and here, look into the iris scanner.
And it's just so bizarre, and the sort of the whole pat-down stuff, which people are, you know, getting outraged about, which is interesting, I guess because it's focusing on a more affluent segment of society. I mean, I don't know, I'm a bit sort of bemused by it all. Now they're upset, you know what I'm saying?
Yep. And you know, if they, you know, they've got, what, 11 of them or 20 of them or whatever number they're going to have, because they're $24,000 a piece. Well, you know what? Using technology, somebody's got to be an early adopter, because it's those early adopters who eventually drive the price down. And soon there'll be handheld units, I'm sure, that every patrolman will have on his hip.
Well, yeah, this is what they've been using in Afghanistan. So it's always interesting. You trace this, and they've always been practicing this shit in their war zones. And then they moving on over to us, you know, starting out with the poor, criminals, and then, you know, it just moves on up. That's what that pat-down is all about, because, you know, the poor ain't to fly in public. But now it's like, you know, hello, welcome to our world at the airport with some mindless shit that seems to be getting people ready just to get ready to be abused by the state, you know?
But all of a sudden, they don't like it.
Well, they don't like it, and all of a sudden you got Republicans having congressional hearings. It's sort of interesting what turns out to be the tipping point. But after looking at how they do those pat-downs, I certainly won't be flying anytime soon. And the X-ray is what kills me, the radiation and the...
Right, just like the iris scanner, at the bottom of that story said, the iris scanner is harmless, citizen.
Exactly. Yeah, and we're supposed to believe that because all I think of is that bitch who said the dust was okay. Keep thinking about that bitch.
Yeah.
Christine Todd Whitman.
Yeah, the breathe it. It's fine.
Right. So we know how that worked out. So, I mean, the credibility is already shot. But I don't know. I just, you know, it's giving me the creeps. The sort of, I guess they're halfway done with ringing of New York City, too, with the cameras. You know that.
Yep.
That's the halfway point.
And, these all go back to Reverbo going over those 14 defining characteristics of fascism. You know, all these things plug right in.
Oh, no, it's incredible. But the thing is, though, when you tie it into, you know, my whole theory that they're developing just a new normal, that this high unemployment rate is here to stay, you're going to have to manage. You have to manage that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so they're going to have to manage it by, I don't know what, rounding people up or keeping people. I don't know. Did you look at that article I sent you with the whole bread line business in D.C.?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's off the hook, too. I was just like, good night. So,
but all of these things, I don't think it's about a roundup, Sandra. I think it's about a way of, it's kind of like the passive denial weapons themselves. It's a way of making sure that the proles stay in their place.
Okay, well, yeah. Okay, yeah, no, yeah, fair enough. Okay, I don't mean roundup. I just mean ways of managing people who are being kicked out of the economy, because this is what is happening, right?
Right.
You're being barred from economic activity, but you, like I said, if you have millions of people in that situation, you got to have some way of responding to that, you know? And, I don't know.
And once again, the whole thing is being proven to be a total messaging screw up by the White House. Well, they're not pleasant, but they're necessary.
Oh, no. I mean, yeah, well, one thing, I mean, yeah, I'm not surprised by
you know, because I look around on sites and, you know, you've got people saying, well, would you feel that way about it, Mr. Obama, if it was Sasha and Malia getting felt up? And the answer is Sasha and Malia don't have to go through that. And the same thing applies to John Boehner. You know, the news came out over the weekend. John Boehner will not be required to go through any form of security screening.
Yeah, but Ted Kennedy was on a terror watch list, though. That's interesting.
Right.
I mean, yeah, no, listen, this is just tearing up. Tearing, two tearing, three tearing, you know, of a society, straight up haves and have not. And I know you got to go, but keep in mind, apparently Bloomberg is making noises about running for the presidency. And that is a nightmare, because you really will have the rich, the government run by the rich for the rich, literally. So look out for him, because he's making noises about his dislike of Obama. So Obama is catering to the ambassadors, and they throw him away. He's done. You know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's incredible. Anyway, listen, I'll let you go.
All right, take care, Sandra.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Yeah, see, that's the thing. President Obama, best be careful, or he's going to wind up seeing the view from under the bus, too, because others will throw him under there. And it's not going to be a bunch of pissed-off liberals. It's going to be the people that you... that he thought he was trying to help. See, that's how it works. Well, thanks everybody for a magnificent evening. And we'll be back tomorrow evening. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go, starting with you who contribute to keep these programs going. We couldn't do it without you. We just couldn't. We've had a couple of contributions in for the, Beat the Swede Challenge. We are $100 into the $500 Beat the Swede Challenge, so that's always a good thing. Thank you, Scott, for starting that. That's geared toward helping us get some technological things fixed that badly need fixing with the year coming to an end. And thank you for your general contributions to keeping the horn going. It wouldn't happen without you. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie. We had a great group in the chat room this evening. Good to see you all there. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. To our blogger, Texas Betsy. Our Southeast correspondent is Matt Osborne at Osborne Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. Reverbo is our cavalcade of crazy op-ed columnist, and he'll have a new post up tomorrow. Make sure you go and read it. Also, welcome to our new blogger, Thinking Ain't Illegal Yet. Check it out. My head writer is David in Tennessee. John Fox helps keep all the electrons going where the electrons need to go. He's our chief engineer. He is the once and future host of All Foxed Up. And he is our web designer and webmaster as well. Damn fine musician into the bargain. A lot of things John Fox is. Ben Birch is the hardest working man in liberal talk running the White Rose Society, whiterosesociety.org, since 2002, literally saving liberal radio via his efforts there. whiterosesociety.org. And also brought to you in part by the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and Coal River Wind. org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Some days you win, some days you lose, and some days you don't play ball because it rains. That really is how it all shakes out, isn't it? Some days the universe cooperates. Some days the universe does not cooperate, or seems not to, until you realize a short time later that it was handing you a gift. You know, Monday is typically Moran Monday here on the Horn, but Monday was a very heavy day of reminiscence and remembrance, and it seemed ill-suited to the sort of shenanigans we usually get into on a Moran Monday. Then last night, because, you know, I'll ask a question. You tell me. How do other people do it? I was getting ready to go, prepping the show and everything for yesterday evening when Agnes came in and said, you know, listen, the doc has told us to take Margie to the hospital. And we did. And we got home last night at roughly 1 a.m. We found out that Margie has indeed an absolutely brutal case of mononucleosis that will be a while in the getting over. She endured the unpleasantness of a spinal tap. She was put inside or around a number of machines that go ping. With what turned out to be actually good news. It's nasty, it's mono, but it ain't something a hell of a lot worse. And in the meantime, even if I had been able to go last night, the universe wanted me to know that no, I wouldn't. Because, in fact, the server crashed. So it was apparently all geared toward making tonight happen. Tonight, the last night of broadcast for the week. Tonight, the night before Thanksgiving. Tonight, a moment, a time perhaps to reflect. But yes, tonight, an opportunity for some silliness and well, gifts. Christmas coming early, if you will. And a gentle reminder from the universe to me and you and us that, well, just pay for the ticket, get on, and take the ride. This is, of course, Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. That means that we have the dishes are almost all done down in the fellowship hall. There is not a scrap of blackberry cobbler left, and there are some very self-satisfied, purple-tinged mouth deacons heading their way upstairs. And that means there's stuff for us to do. Right? Right. So, as the deacons do begin to pass around the plate, let's go ahead and start the opening hymn, if you will, and get the minister of music to come forward, brother. And remember, please don't make change in the plate. And for the love of God, please don't use Monopoly money. It don't work, not even with PayPal. If you want, as the offertory hymn is played, if you want to help out to keep the program going, well, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, headonradionetwork.com, under the tab Contribute. There's also a snail mail address there. And thanks to all of you who are doing your dead level best to keep this all chugging along from month to month to month. So, Mr. Minister of Music, if you would, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen. you say, praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang. I love you. Welcome, brethren and sisters, to the Cathedral of Common Sense. Come on in out of the parking lot. Quit smoking with the heathens and the strippers out there that are protesting. Come on in. Come on down that blood-red carpet and get on your knees. Everybody, if you can't come down the blood-red carpet, get on your knees there in the pews. We have some thanksgiving to do. Hallelujah, glory, hallelujah. I am Archpope Imam Rabbi, Shaman, Mysticist, Bob Kincaid, I am. And this is the Synagogue of Common Sense. This is the Mosque of Mentality. This is the Cathedral. This is the Cathedral of Cerebration. Amen and amen. Lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays flowing through you. Hallelujah, hallelujah. We do have Thanksgiving to do, and I'm not just talking about a turkey, brother and sister. I'm talking about some real Thanksgiving to do. Justice has been done. Breaking news this very instant, reaching me via our blogger, Texas Betsy, as well as our West Coast correspondent, Marty. Headline, jury convicts delay in money laundering case. Tom DeLay, the former U.S. House Majority Leader, whose name became synonymous with the Republicans' controversial rise to power in the Texas House, was found guilty today of laundering money in connection with the 2002 elections. They told the judge at 4:46 p.m. Central Standard Time that they had reached a verdict. They'd been deliberating since Monday afternoon. Let's see, what's that phrase they like to use in Texas? Get a rope! The celebration is probably premature because it will be appealed. And we know what it will be appealed to, and the judicial system in Texas is not known for its You know what I mean. Marty noting, I would love a nice replay of the scene at the top of Superman, the movie. The first Krypton elder saying, guilty! Oh, wouldn't this have been nice? Does this mean that's a darn good question, David in Tennessee. Does this mean he has to give back his Dancing with the Stars trophy? You know what? I'm going to be magnanimous about this. I don't think they should do to Tom DeLay what was done to Jim Thorpe and strip him of his medals. I think they just need to strip him of his his right to vote and his right to keep an arm bears and his right to live in polite society and put him in prison for a couple of 100,000 years. Right. Yeah. I don't know. Put him, obligatory Star Trek reference, put him aboard a ship and just suspended animation and just send him bobbing off into the vacuum for a few centuries until, until a credulous young Russian ensign can say, "Captain, it was Tom. It was Tom. And he put Jack Abramoff's in our ears. It was terrible." Wow, that was a stretch. No, that is extremely good news, and further proof that the universe abides, I guess. You know, it is a handy thing that it is not Moran Monday, because that means we can talk freely also about Mussolini, Caribou Barbie. You know what happened. It's getting a little hot and uncomfortable on the Korean Peninsula. Our buddy Kevin, I hope, is staying safe and staying alert and figuring out which way to go. In terms of, you know, run! If the excrement strikes the fan blades, so to speak. This is supposedly a matter of, this is the new son, 25 years old, of the current dear leader who's flexing his muscles and showing that he's ready to be, the next dear leader. And so they shelled, and the North Korean shelled the South Korean island. It's some nastiness. Three Korean Marines were killed, I believe. A lot of damage, a lot of destruction. And thus far, on the part of the South Koreans, a great deal of restraint. Good for them. Restraint, however, is not something for which Mussolini, Caribou Barbie, Godzilla from Wasilla is known. And, you know, when you've got a burgeoning international crisis like this, you want to go and immediately get the opinion of a half-term governor, right? Because after all, she's putting the big political striptease on America, trying to make us guess whether she will or whether she won't run for office, that is. And that's exactly what Fox did. That's exactly what Fox did. They asked her on the Glenn Beck radio show. His co-host asked Mussolini what she thought about the present crisis on the Korean Peninsula. Oh dear.
You said in the last few days that you are considering a run for president, and polls show that you would probably win the Republican nomination. How would you handle a situation like just developed in North Korea?
Well, in North Korea, this is stemming from, I think, a greater problem when we're all sitting around asking, oh, no, what are we going to do? And we're not having a lot of faith that the White House is going to come out with a strong enough policy to sanction what it is that North Korea is going to do. So this speaks to a bigger picture here that certainly scares me in terms of our...
Sanction North Korea for what North Korea is going to do. Does she mean sanction, like in impose sanctions, like trade embargoes and stuff like that? Or sanction as in give approval to? It's really not contextually clear, is it? But I think it will become clear.
Security policies. But obviously, got to stand with our North Korean allies. We're bound to by treaty.
Yeah, obviously, got to stand with our North Korean allies. We're bound to by treaty. Bless his heart. This is one of those moments when it doesn't pay to be the Beckerheads co-host. Let's back up and hear him jump in and try to save Caribou Barbie's bacon.
He scares me in terms of our national security policies. But obviously, got to stand with our North Korean allies. We're bound to by treaty.
South
We're
Korean.
Also bound by... Yeah.
And South Korean. Did you hear that news? That is the... noise that a guy behind a microphone makes when the world begins to sort of shift and become fluid and spin out of control, and he just realizes that he's become famous for reasons he didn't want to become famous for and really didn't need it. Backing up again.
Of our national security policies, but obviously, got to stand with our North Korean allies. We're bound to by treaty.
South
We're
Korean.
Also bound by...
Yeah. And
we're also bound by prudence to stand with our our South Korean allies, yes. And, you know, to remind North Korea, well, we're not going to reward bad behavior, and we're not going to walk away. And we do need to press China to do more to increase
pressure. But how do we?
You mean we're not going to reward bad behavior, kind of like when she got her birthed a baby, got pregnant out of wedlock, eldest daughter, and got her a gig on Dancing with the Stars. We're not going to reward bad behavior, like when all those teabagging the horses' rear ends are out there exploiting the little window inside the voting hoopla where they could do Jesus. Now, bless their hearts, the folks over at Think Progress write, Palin misspoke, and this was hardly the first time. While, you know us, liberal elitists, big words, while malapropisms can and should be forgiven for frequent public speakers, it's worth remembering what happened the last time America elected a candidate known for gaffes. This is not a gaffe. George Bush not knowing the difference between Australia and Austria was not a gaffe. There's a word for it. There's a word for it, and I would encourage my friends at Think Progress to use it. It's not a malapropism. It is ignorance. She can see Russia from her house, but she can't see Korea or which one of the ones is, you know, the bad one. Damn. It is a shame we grandfathered her out of Morin Monday. But what I love best of all is not the South Korea, it's what happens with the correction and how she responds to the correction.
Agreed a problem when we're all sitting around asking, oh no, what are we going to do? And we're not having a lot of faith that the White House is going to come out with a strong enough policy to sanction what it is that North Korea is going to do. So this speaks to a bigger picture here that certainly scares me in terms of our national security policies. But obviously, got to stand with our North Korean allies. We're bound to by treaty.
South
we're
Korean.
Also bound by. Yeah. And
the yeah. The yeah is precious. Yeah, them too. The stupid, it hurts. And I'm not trying to be an elitist here. I can't tell you when it was that I learned there was a difference between North and South Korea. It may be that I learned it very early on because we had a neighbor who had been involved in that conflict. And maybe it just stuck that way. This is South Korean. Yeah. That's the equivalent of Archie Bunker going, yeah, eat it, whatever. You know, over there on Sunday with your Reverend Fletcher, whatever. Jesus. You get the, you know, when you got stories like this, you know you've got a busy day ahead of you, a busy night ahead of you. Remember, what was it, last week? Was it last week that we talked about Representative Joe Barton from Texas, who was trying to take over the House Committee on Energy and Commerce, and that's why he was raising a stink about them little pig-tailed light bulbs that communist Obama is trying to make us all, instead of good God-fearing incandescent light bulbs like what the angel Edison intended for us to be using. Remember that? Well, it's getting fun. The apparent lead candidate for that position is a Repiglican from Michigan by the name of Fred Upton. And Joe Barton, and John Shimkus and Cliff Stearns, all Republicans, of course, but of the even crazier variety. I mean, this is all a continuum of crazy, of course. But all crazy, but even crazier than the front runner, are having a fit. Now, every one of these candidates, of course, you know, it's not like one of them's going to say, you know, I think we need to work with President Obama. Communist! No. But Fred Upton, as well, Republicans go, might be called a moderate hard right winger. Well, categories and subcategories, circles within circles, you know. But he said that greenhouse emissions should be reduced. That's huge for a Republican. But it has turned into an absolute teabag and steel cage death match, this chairmanship. The teabaggers have gone to war against Fred Upton. Mainly, again, over, no really, light bulbs. Glenn Beck and his Beckerheads have been sliming Fred Upton over a bill to ban incandescent light bulbs. Now, if you were listening last week, you know we had a very nice note from Scott in Sweden, the author of the Beat the Swede Challenge, to take care of some technical crisis-type stuff that really badly needs taken care of. Scott has graciously put forward $500, and anybody who wants to get on board with that, solely to work on technical issues here at the Horn, you know, bum computers, dead computers, and things that have to happen, yada, yada, yada. He is, well, you know, and we've gotten about $120 of the way toward the Beat the Swede Challenge, but the Swede isn't even feeling it yet. But anyway, Scott the Swede, formerly Scott the American, Scott the Swede pointed out that they've gotten rid of incandescent bulbs, and, you know, really, life in a part of the world that gets pretty damn dark during the winter months, that life has not appreciably diminished. Or perhaps one might say that life has not diminished at all. Them little pigtail bulbs. I don't like them. I don't want no pigtail bulbs. I like nice, rounded bulb. God, it's more aesthetically pleasing. And I like it how it's all hot when I goes to touch it. When it goes out. I forget sometimes, you know, because the light goes out and you just... Damn! That traditional God-fearing incandescent bulb is hotter than hell. You know what I mean. But they're at war. The teabaggers are at war with Fred Upton. The Freedom Works thugs have gotten into the battle. They've warned, light bulbs are just the beginning. Fred Upton, currently considered the front runner for chairmanship of the critical House Energy and Commerce Committee, is far out of step with the Tea Party movement. You know, every chance I get, if there are any of them nearby, I do my dead level best not to step in any Tea Party movement. The GOP and the American people as a whole. Oh, really? The American people hate. I'll be damned. They like buying inefficient bulbs a lot, and buying them a lot more than they'd ever have to buy compact fluorescents. They like having higher power bills. Really? Well, that's what they say over at Freedom Works. Freiwerken. I don't know. You may have heard Glenn Beck talking about Fred Upton introducing a bill to ban incandescent light bulbs in favor of so-called environmentally friendly alternatives. The truth is, Fred Upton has a big government record a mile long, and light bulbs are just the beginning. Light bulbs are the beginning. I guess it probably ends with us all wearing drab gray clothing and reciting from... Fred's little red book of what? Oh, it's going to be an interesting evening without a doubt. We will continue, by the way, the Beat the Swede challenge through the end of November. Just in answer to a question that rolled in. But that's not all. I mean, Jesus, we're going to be busy tonight. Are you familiar? Anybody here read Motor Trend magazine? Because I kind of do from time to time. I like to read about cars I'll never be able to buy. It's just kind of, you know, redneck in me. I like automobiles. Well, in a post at Motor Trend Online called Rush to Judgment, Todd Lassa has written something of note. It goes like this. You said, folks, of all the cars, no offense, General Motors, please, but of all the cars in the world, the Chevrolet Volt is the car of the year. Motor Trend Magazine, that's the end of them. How in the world do they have any credibility? No one has been, not one has been sold. The Volt is the car of the year. And Mr. Todd Lassa responds. So, Mr. Limbaugh, you didn't enjoy your drive of our 2011 car of the year, the Chevrolet Volt? Assuming you've been anywhere near the biggest automotive technological breakthrough since, oh, I don't know, maybe the self-starter, could you even find your way to the front seat? Or are you happy attacking a car that you've never even seen in person? Last time you ranted about the Volt, you got confused about the range and said on the air that the car could be driven no more than 40 miles at a time, period. At least you stayed away from that issue this time, but you continue to attack it as a car only a tree-hugging, Obama-supporting Government Motors customer would want. As radio loudmouths like you would note, none of those potential customers were to be found after November 2nd. And back to us for a moment. Our credibility, Mr. Limbaugh, comes from actually driving and testing the car and understanding its advanced technology. It comes from driving and testing virtually every new car sold and from doing this once a year with all the new or significantly improved models all at the same time. We test, make judgments, and write about things that we understand. Chevrolet has not sold one Volt because it's not on sale yet. It will not sell 10,000 this first model year, although GE plans to buy truckloads for its fleet because it takes time to ramp up production. See, Rush, because we're the world's automotive authority, we get access to many cars before they go on sale. What will the ditto heads think? Lassa continues, but harumph! In its attempt to force cars that don't use much gas on us, how un-American, un-ExxonMobil, un-Halliburton is that? The Obama administration is offering a $7,500 tax credit on the Chevy Volt, grabbing tax breaks and credits right out of the deserving job-creating pockets of America's richest individuals? How dare he! This is another of your distortions, Rush. Repeated by the otherwise more level-headed George Will. I don't know about that level-headed part. I think the bow tie cut off the supply of oxygen to his brain a long time ago. Repeated by the otherwise more level-headed George Will in the Washington Post last Sunday. The $7,500 Obama tax credit is an expansion of President Bush's hybrid credits from the last decade. The Obama tax credit extends to the new Nissan Leaf, too. But if you or Will slammed that car, I've not heard or read it. I'd be surprised if you did, though, as Nissan is building the Leaf in a non-union factory in a right-to-work state represented by two Republican senators, a factory located there because Tennessee offered Nissan big tax credits. Maybe you're worried that if the $7,500 tax credit works, too many people will buy the Volt and that could reduce the need for oil drilling tax credits? He makes some great points, and this is over at blogs.motortrend.com. It's called Rush to Judgment. Oh, but on a Wednesday that could very easily be Moran Monday, it is the last paragraph that is just a solid oak stake right through that fat encrusted heart of that old right wing drug abusing bastard. All the shouting from you or from electric car purists on the left can't distort the fact that Chevy Volt is indeed a technological breakthrough. And it's more. It's a technological breakthrough that many American families can use for gas-free daily commutes and well-planned vacation drives. It's expensive for a Chevy, but many of those families will find the gasoline saved worth it. If you can stop shilling for your favorite political party long enough to go for a drive, you might really enjoy the Chevy Volt. I'm sure GM would be happy to lend you one for the weekend. And then this. Then this. Oh, direct amidships. Just remember, driving and OxyContin don't mix. Driving and OxyContin don't mix. Ouch. I think you just got pwned. However you pronounce P-W-N-D. I think you just got that done to you flush. Not by some liberal, but by a guy who just happens to know about writing about cars. And, by the way, our buddy Kevin in Seoul just wrote in. He said, "Hey, Bob, it's Kevin. Tell all my friends from the Horn family all is well with me, and if things do get hot, I have a bug-out plan set in place where I can be out of the country in a few hours. One thing I want to point out, though, I find it amazingly coincidental that this attack comes a week after the South Korean-United States free trade talks failed. As much as I do respect President Obama, we must remember for years the only steady paycheck he was receiving was from the University of Chicago, home to the University of Chicago School of Asshole Economics. Happy Thanksgiving to you all," says Kevin from Seoul. And P.S., can Rush Limbaugh even fit into a Volt? There you go. Now, there were a lot of things about the whole Korean affair that were bothersome. Among other things, our response to the shelling has been to say, we're going to hold joint military exercises in response to it. That exercise with the South Korean Navy will include sending the aircraft carrier George Washington, as well as its accompanying fleet of escort vessels and defense vessels, into the region. What could possibly go wrong? But that's just par for the course, really, isn't it? Last night's show was interrupted, and so I didn't get to the story about the fake Taliban mullah. What, Edith? Huh? Yeah. We paid, you and I, taxpayers, horse-gagging loads of money to a guy who was apparently the Afghan tribal equivalent of Chance the Gardener from being there. We took him from the tribal areas of Pakistan and cleared the road for him so that he could go all the way to Kabul and have high-level meetings with Hamid Karzai. Yeah. But then it turned out that he wasn't really who he said he was. He was not the six-fingered man. And we're left standing there saying, huh? Of course, the lead on that story was buried deep in the copy. I read the New York Times account, and you had to go way paragraphs into it before you found the part where they said the New York Times agreed not to say anything about this before the elections. Facepalm. Can we just assume that if there's actually any breaking news that's important to the Republic, that the New York Times will sit on it for any reason or no reason, as long as somebody asks them to from the administration, whether it be the Bush or the Obama administration? Can we just say that? Yeah. I mean, that's embarrassing. That's kind of a confession, institutionally speaking, that all those Afghans look the same to us. Ah, he's got the beard and the flowing robes. Doesn't that qualify? But the best part of it all is that this imposter was probably a plant of the Pakistani ISI. You know, the secret police of Pakistan. Pakistan, who receives billions of dollars of your money and mine every year for reasons that aren't readily apparent, given the fact that the ISI is out there palming off phony mullahs on us. Does that strike you as just the height of absurdity? Does that strike you as reason number, oh my God, for us to get out of Afghanistan? So let's recap. The Department of Let's Find a War decided there were WMDs in Iraq and decided we needed a war there. We're 5,000 dead Americans to the bad and about 1 million dead Iraqis to the bad. But never mind, their credibility wasn't damaged. Because after all, they had decided that we needed to bomb Afghanistan into the Stone Age, even though they were, as Donald Rumsfeld famously said, already there. And then that same department of Let's Find a War, come on down! You can have the war in the box where Carol Merrill is now standing, or you can have the war behind curtain number 3. I'll take them both, Monty. The Department of Let's Find a War said, hey, that guy, he's not drooling into his beard. Maybe he'd like to talk to the Hamid Karzai. Nobody else will. Again, what could possibly go wrong? A lot. Yeah, no kidding. I never dreamed for an instant, little eighth grader that I was, sitting struggling to get some of the more, you know, you get the silly stuff no matter how young you are. You get the silly stuff in Python. It's the intellectual stuff that you got to work on. And I never dreamed, moving from Monty Python and the Holy Grail on to various and sundry comedy albums by Monty Python, I never dreamed that I would spend my adulthood watching serious government devolve into a clip featuring Eric Idle and John Cleese. That first time that I ever sat down and watched Being There on VHS. I never dreamed we would have 8 years of Chance the Gardener in the White House. It was a cute fantasy on a theme. It came true. It came true. And now Chance the Gardener has apparently been translated into Pashtun. This is disturbing.
Mr. President, what do you want to do about the North Koreans?
Let's send an aircraft carrier over there. A few destroyers and escorts and cruiser or two, a couple of submarines. Because, you know, those people are crazy and they have nukes. Let's poke them with a sharp stick a couple of times and see what happens. I hate it when the clues just get scattered around like this. It's tough, I tell you. But it's also the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, which is kind of like a Friday because this is the last we'll do for a while. So enough shilly-shallying about. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's Richard.
Hey, Richard, what's up?
I didn't expect to get to you so fast, so my stack is in another room. And therefore, I don't know what I wanted to say.
You want to go back on hold till you can get your stack?
Actually, I can switch phones and go walk in there, which I will do. So in the meantime, I just want to say Korea is on my mind. And,
as opposed to Georgia?
Yeah, the reason why Korea is on my mind is because I've been repairing my Hyundai. That's the car that I drive. It's an old one. And I broke my mirror, one of my mirrors, the right side view mirror.
The one where objects may be closer than they appear?
Yes, exactly. So I figured I broke the glass, so I figured I would replace the glass. No such thing.
No, you got to replace the whole assembly, don't you?
The whole damn thing. Well, I broke not only the glass, but also the part of the mechanism under it, you know, like the plastic pieces that hold the glass. And a friend of mine was kind enough to actually buy me a mirror. He found an aftermarket mirror. And so we took the old mirror off the car, the whole thing, housing and all, and put it on my workbench, you know, and started taking it apart. And what do I find? You cannot take the mirror apart.
You're not supposed to. It's hermetically sealed.
You have to buy the whole entire thing.
Yes.
Because it's held together with rivets. They're like these three rivets.
Yeah, that you ain't going to drill out either.
Right. Well, I don't know. I don't drill out rivets. But the thing is, the way it's assembled is incredible. I mean, you cannot fix this thing. Even the, you know, it's an electric mirror, so it's got wires that come through to a connector. And the wires come through a hole which is too small to pass the connector through. So obviously at the factory, they pass the wires through and then they have some sort of a little jig that holds all the pieces in place while they fasten the connector to the wires. And, you know, Bob, the reason why I keep on bringing up all this consumer stuff is that it's like a Wild West out there in fields where we have traditions that humanize to some degree the products that we buy. It's just, it's a zoo out there. You can't fix things.
Because you're not supposed to. You're supposed to throw it away, where it will eventually wind up on a barge that goes back to China, and they put it on a mound where little Chinese children take it apart, because they know how. Just because you don't know how, Richard, doesn't mean that some enterprising Chinese peasant doesn't.
Well, I'm good at this, you know. I'm good at fixing stuff. I mean, I've done it for a living among the great number of things that I've done for a living. And, you know, products that are made this way just piss me off. And the reason I come up with is not, it's not intentional. It's just, it's cheaper for them to make it. There's more profit in making it unrepairable. So I don't think about an ulterior motive like planned obsolescence. It's simply, this is the way we do it cheaper.
No, well, okay, precisely. And why do we do it cheaper? Because the accounting department is now in charge of everything.
Well, you know, the Koreans are different. I mean, Hyundai is a big family-owned company, like, you know, like the big Korean, like Samsung, you know, these are huge, big family conglomerates.
Yeah, oligarchs.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how, you know, that's how things are in Korea, as far as I know. I mean, I welcome Kevin to straighten me out. But, you know, I'm just looking, I call you up and I say, gee, look at what I found inside the food today, you know? And the reason why...
Oh, I owe you.
Yeah? What are you going to pay me back with?
Well, I'm looking every day in the store, whatever. Hey, would Richard like this? Wait a minute, cyanide? You know.
Yeah, but you see, my point about that, the underlying issue is that we don't have regulation. Nobody's looking at this stuff. People aren't inspecting things. Or the laws have been changed while we haven't been looking. You know? As a woman told me when I called to complain that the cheese did not have any label on it that said what was in it. And she just piped right back and said, well, we don't have to put that on the label if it won't fit.
And... yeah, because, right, you know, melamine is too long a word.
Bob, this is mozzarella cheese I was talking about.
You know? Right, yeah, not Venezuelan beaver cheese.
Exactly. So with that in mind, I have some chocolate to talk about today. And this is from a company...
You're going after my chocolate now, aren't you? You're going to go after my chocolate.
Well, it's a certain kind of chocolate. It's not everybody chocolate. It's from a company called Global Brands LLC in Scottsdale, Arizona. Now, this is a company that sells food to dollar stores. Okay, that's their shtick. They sell food to dollar stores. And this is some nice, yummy chocolate. It says fine European chocolate, sweet obsession, simply the finest chocolate on earth. It's dark chocolate.
Crunchy frogs.
And it's from Poland. This is interesting, okay?
You know what? I was in, I think I mentioned it on the show, I was in my little local grocery store not too awfully long back, and they had 99-cent jars, good-sized jars, 99-cent jars of bread and butter pickles and dill pickles. And, you know, and they weren't in the pickle aisle. They were in the dollar item aisle. And there's dollar dishwashing soap and dollar pickles and dollar pasta sauce.
Yeah, that's the stuff I'm talking about.
Yeah, and so I pick it up and it says product of India.
That's right. I've seen a pasta with an Italian flag that's from Turkey. Egypt.
Yeah, and it's the exact opposite. Richard, it's the exact opposite of that scene from the Battle of the Bulge, where Robert Shaw looks at his sergeant there. You know, Robert Shaw's the tank commander, the Panzer commander, and he says,
"Yeah,
look in this box, Manfred. Look what they are doing. This is a chocolate cake. The Americans are shipping chocolate cake. We are screwed." Well, it was the exact opposite for me, for when I looked at the Indian pickles and I went, well, you know, with the hillbilly accent, I guess, God damn, would you just look at this? Indian pickles. We can't make our own pickles no more.
Where's the store?
It's 6 miles up the road from me.
Oh, out the boonies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to read you some ingredients in the Polish chocolate now.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Okay. Sugar, cocoa mass, vegetable fat, cocoa butter, cocoa powder, emulsifiers, lecithin, polyglycerol, polyricinoleic acid. Artificial.
You know what? I don't want chocolate if it doesn't have polyglycerol, polyricinoleic acid in it.
That's good. Good pronunciation, Bob. Anyway, since when does chocolate have vegetable fat as the third ingredient?
Well, that chocolate is... You know, it's weird that you would place this call this evening because, no, what's weird is the turnings of my mind, Richard. But I was thinking earlier today, because I think about crazy crap like this, I was thinking about native diets around the world. You know, like the radical vegans who would like to force the Eskimos to be vegans like them, even though, you know, there are no vegetables in the Arctic. You know, but the Inuit, you know,
well, we can teach them to successfully grow the Arctic ice radish.
It's just seal eyeballs all the way across the polar ice cap, at least when it's frozen. But I was thinking about that, and for instance, cultures that eat meat often in their ancient format were not fatty cultures because they had the animal husbandry part of it down, but they didn't have the fatten them up part of it down. So even the beef was lean, the lamb was lean, the pork was relatively lean. You know, trichinosis, but what are you going to do? But then I got to thinking about the cultures on this side where there weren't that much in the way of domesticated animals. Certainly the Plains Indians never managed to domesticate the buffalo beyond getting them to cooperate when being chased off a cliff. The Mesoamerican cultures had vast amounts of waterfowl on Lake Texcoco. But all of the meats that they had available to them were very not fatty. And you do have to have, and it comes as quite a surprise, in the 21st century, you do have to have some fat in your diet. And one of the reasons for the fascination of the Mesoamerican peoples with chocolate is that they had two things going for them in the plant world down there that were fatty. And that was avocados and chocolate. Chocolate is, in its essence, fat. I mean, Jesus Christ, we call it white chocolate? No, it's cocoa butter fat with some damn sugar in it.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
And so the idea that what they've done is they've processed out all the cocoa butter from the cocoa mass. Did I hear that word in the cocoa mass?
Yeah, well, you mean...
Is that where the cracker has this sort of cuckoo for cocoa puffs flavor to it or something?
It does say cocoa mass on this list of ingredients.
Yeah, so what that means is they have extracted all of the highly valuable cocoa fat out of the cocoa.
They have, yes.
And what they've done is they've replaced it with a cheaper fat, like, say, partially hydrogenated soy palm kernel yada yada oil.
Yeah, what they've done is they've extracted some of it because the third ingredient is cocoa. The fourth ingredient is cocoa butter.
And right, which they had to take out to put back in.
Exactly.
But they took it out and they sold it to a company that deals in cocoa butter, who then turned around and sold it back to them. It's all accounting, Richard.
Well, it's a good one. I don't know. I was just listening to your program that you did about John F. Kennedy being assassinated, and the "where were you" question, and I remembered where it was, of course. May I say?
Please.
Yeah, where I was going. I was on my way to the Manus College of Music, which has been on my mind this week because of its connection with Kodachrome film. Two musicians invented Kodachrome, the first successful color film, and Leopold Manus was one of the inventors who I met. he named his music college after his father, and I was a student there. I was on my way to the Manus College of Music and had changed trains on the subway from the on the Lexington Avenue subway on the IRT, and I changed from the express to the local to go up to the school under Grand Central Station. And a man ran up to me on the platform. He said, "Did you hear the news?" I said, "No, what?" He said, "President Kennedy's been shot." And it's an interesting thing about New York City. People usually are isolated in their own little cocoons in the middle of the mob.
Yeah, it's the biggest small town on the planet.
Well, not exactly. I mean, they don't talk to each other, But some big event comes along, and all of a sudden, everybody opens up and becomes very nice, very helpful to one another. The first time I knew was when there was the big Eastern power failure in the Northeast. It was in the 60s, and all the electricity went off all over New England, New York City, parts of New Jersey, and more. And the lights went out in the subway, the trains didn't run, because the city had sold all their power, the subway power plants, to private operators. And people started talking with each other. And people started helping each other. And I was in Connecticut, you know, and I was upset because I missed it, you know. It would have been great to experience that. So, but you know, coming back to this, it's like there was this sharing. And one thing I want to mention, because I'm quite a bit older than you, is that when Kennedy was in office, there was a spirit of hopefulness in the air in this country. And I don't know if anybody's touched on that, but it was a feeling of that good things can happen. And with that assassination, that hopefulness was dashed.
All went away.
Yep, never came back. So that's, you know, my experience from that perspective. And I'm old enough that when I used to watch Joseph McCarthy on television, I would run home from school, and I would watch the McCarthy hearings. They were broadcast on TV. And I knew that something was wrong with this, that this was an evil man, that evil things were happening.
But you also had the faith, and I understand it's a dangerous word, you also had the faith that sooner or later the reality and truth, justice, and the American way would catch up with him, right? And it did.
With who? Oh, with McCarthy? I didn't know. You know, I wasn't even that cognizant. I was too young, you know, too little. I was in, I don't know, second grade, first grade, something like that.
Oh, so you were just able to pick out the, Mommy, that's a very bad man over there.
He kind of, you know, it's like television was new. Television was new. We got our first TV, and it had a 10-inch black and white screen, you know. And so, for whatever reason, it's like I got glued to this. I was addicted to watching the McCarthy hearings, even though I didn't know what was going on. I knew it was government, and I knew it was wrong. And the people were being harmed. And there was, you know, the Red Scare stayed with us for quite a while. Even after the McCarthy hearings.
Well, because you never knew where the next Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were going to pop up.
Exactly. So I had, when I went to junior high, and this is a few years later, I had an art teacher who was a woman who came from Israel, and she was one of these wonderful, devoted, dedicated people, and she used to have art classes in her apartment in Manhattan. For the children, she would invite the kids to come to her place, and she would give out materials, and she would give art classes for free to the kids. And she would serve, you know, cookies and stuff, you know, all out of her own pocket. And there were two math teachers, old biddies, who couldn't handle that. They started a rumor that she was a communist and got her fired. And last time I saw this woman, she was crying, and that was that. So,
You know, I'm sure you're familiar with who wrote the play, The Children's Hour. Was that Lillian Hillman?
I don't know it.
But it's predicated on a pair of teachers being alleged to be lesbians inside a private school, but there's a lot of overtones of McCarthyism about it, you know. And in fact, you know, later on we have in subsequent generations the phrase sexual McCarthyism, which is another way of smearing someone based upon their sexuality, in the same way that McCarthy smeared people. But the interesting thing is that in so many ways, because of the number of people who were being destroyed, the number of people who were being harmed, the number of people whose lives were literally being ruined, Hollywood had to find different ways to talk about McCarthyism without talking about McCarthyism. You get it in The Children's Hour. You get it in Arthur Miller's The Crucible, which is, oddly enough, not about pilgrims. You get it in Rod Serling's Twilight Zone in a number of different episodes. I think of The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. And they're all reflections of the world that people are very fearfully seeing around them that arise out of stories like that of this woman that you obviously think kindly of and have recalled.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, I come from, how would I put it? I'm an artist. I mean, my background's music. My father was a fine artist. And, you know, he had a hard life financially. But, you know, the art scene in New York was very vivid, especially during the WPA times, when artists could actually earn a living doing art, as opposed to pandering to a very trendy marketplace. I mean, a lot of the art market is involved in selling to investors. And it's very freaky. It's weird, but it's, you know, it's where it's at. There's a lot of politics involved in the arts, which I won't get into right now. But for me, it's like when I look at Hollywood, for instance. I mean, when I look at people in the arts in general, they tend to be liberals, you know? The people who do it for a living don't tend to be right-wingers.
Yeah, the ones who aren't John Voight.
Exactly. And there's this Republican actor. He's, I think he's a Southern. He's very good. Robert Duvall. He's a Republican.
Yeah.
And I'm always taken aback, you know. I don't know how to process this information, you know, when I get it. It's like, how can somebody in the arts be a conservative, you know? It doesn't compute for me. And I have to acknowledge that at least some of them are.
But it's... sure. But it's... they are rare as hen's teeth. And it's because artists don't inhabit a world of hate, generally speaking. You know, unless their particular art happens to be like swastika art.
Yeah, and that does exist. Well, I think that artists tend to have a different vantage point than many other people. When I was in high school, a teacher once asked his class to define art. You know, what is art? That's a great question. And this was not in New York, but this was in Connecticut. And what we all came up with was that art is a method of communication that transcends everyday speech. What do you feel about that?
I think art is the most important speech that any given culture has. If you think, for instance, about the Greek comedy Lysistrata, in which you know, it was put on at a time when the Athenian democracy was in a very, very desperate war that would eventually wind up costing them their freedom. Still, that culture allowed a play to be put on that criticized warfare and suggested, among other things, that women start holding out on their men until the dumbasses decide to quit making war.
Uh-huh. I remember that. Yeah.
It's, and I'm not going to sit here and decide what is and isn't art, because, again, I'm not a right-winger. I'm neither offended nor drawn to, for instance, a giant life-size chocolate Jesus with chocolate, you know, with a chocolate Johnson. But apparently it was enough to drive that crazy old freak William O'Donohue of the Catholic League to calling for the artist's assassination. And you can always, you know, you can always spot the conservatives because their ideas are so godforsaken weak that they cannot be held up to ridicule. that they cannot withstand any sort of scrutiny. They can't withstand intellectual artistry. They can't withstand graphic artistry. They can't withstand musical artistry. And that's why totalitarian regimes clamp down on the artists first and foremost. And that's how you can spot one of these right-wing POSs whenever they start. You know, I want to defund the National Endowment for the Arts because they gave a $1 million grant for a man to put a cross in a mason jar of pee-pee.
I remember that. Well,
when the fact of the matter is, it wasn't a $1 million grant. And if you're gonna, and if we're ever gonna have the art that the right wingers want, the only way they can ever have it is by letting everybody have their art. It's kind of like the argument between fundamentalist religion industry people, Richard, because sometimes I think that the best way to deal with this is to let the fundamentalists have their way and set up their theocracy, because the sooner that they do that, the sooner they will turn the knives on each other and we can get back to the business of being normal.
Well, that sounds like Malloy's business about turning it over to the Republicans, you know. There's a beauty to that. I rather like it, you know. I wish that some fundamentalists would come to my door and tell me that the United States is really a Christian country, you know. I would love that, because I would say to them, you know, I agree with you, and that's why I've decided to become a Roman Catholic. I want the Pope to run the United States because we are a Christian country, and that's the purest form of Christianity. You know, just.
But it is prayer meeting Wednesday, and I got to tell you, the latest pronouncement by the Pope about condoms about made me pluck my own eyeballs out, dip my head in a bucket of lye, and walk off a cliff. Did you hear this?
No.
The Pope has said that condoms may, in some instances, be okay.
Oh, really? I love it.
It's okay. Now, bear in mind, the church doesn't, you know, they're not encouraging anybody to be homosexual or nothing.
Uh-huh.
But condoms may come in handy for stopping the spread of AIDS among, like, gay male prostitutes.
Oh, really? Well,
okay if gay male prostitutes segregate their seed because they weren't going to put their seed in a woman in the first place.
That's really loony. By the way, I
and you know, but this comes out on the same week that you know, bless his little Nazi heart, the Benny the Rat says, you know what? Everybody in the world ought to have universal single-payer health care.
Oh, I like that.
And you got to go.
Yeah.
He got one right. Oh, look, maybe we can take his house helmet off after a while.
Well, I tell you, so the Republicans are out to kill Baucus care. And I almost wish that they would.
Well, they're beginning to catch some crap, though, because this idea of make the bastards that hate health care not take the health care that's offered to government representatives like members of Congress is beginning to get some weight, Richard.
What's happening?
There's a letter went out, I forget who the author of it was, saying, you know, listen, all you teabaggers that said you don't believe in government health care, don't you dare sign up for what you're entitled to for being a member of Congress. And you know, some of the teabaggers have said, you're right, I ain't gonna.
You know, I've been hearing a couple of people, Chomsky is one, and I'm forgetting who the other one was, who have been saying that the teabaggers have a very legitimate frustration. And as we know, I mean, they hurl it around. They're aiming it in the wrong places, but the raw material is legitimate. And what I'm interested in doing is wondering if we are able to help refocus that anger to a position that's more in agreement with where we're at.
I don't know.
It's an interest. I mean, as you've pointed out many times, we, on our side, we are far from being on message. We don't know how to talk to people. We do
Yeah, it's...
I mean, Lakoff is out there. He's talking, you know.
Oh, sure. But we're too distracted, and that, you know, that's why I say it's not about hurt, you know, being a liberal. It's not about hurting cats. It's about wrangling butterflies. Because you can get the cats to slow down for a can of little Friskies once in a while. The butterflies?
Forget it.
Forget it. Hey, Richard, it's good to hear from you. I hope you have a good Thanksgiving tomorrow and a good week and weekend coming.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Good to chat with you finally, and go with the next call.
Yeah, and good luck with the mirror assembly.
It's done.
Ah, okay. Well, so you won after all.
Well, that's a whole other story. I'll get into it some other time.
All right.
There's merit, but okay. Onward.
All right. Take care, Richard. Bye now.
Okay, bye.
And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Breaking news. The 56% of Americans, you know, don't want to go to war on behalf of South Korea. So, just in case.
We're starting at 56%? You know, that's a good sign.
Right. No, I just, you know... It's just because, you know, the president or his spokespeople are already talking about, oh, how we're going to jump to their aid quick with the hurry. But the thing is, President Lee is a right-wing freak who ended the sunshine policy when they were real close to unifying, and the other poor bastard jumped out a window. You know, I mean, the South Korea, that shit is deep. The last South Korean president committed suicide over corruption, I think, but... the U.S. wasn't that interested in that little unification at the time. I remember. And so, I'm not saying that North Korea isn't crazy. They are. But this provocation was brought on by President Lee and his fucked up exercise in shooting into disputed territory of North Korea. They said they would respond, and they did. So, the press is printing all this, oh, you know, crazy North Korea. It's like, no, they need to pull it back a bit. And look at that freak who's, you know, some sort of right-wing, they call him South Korea's Reagan. Do you need to know more?
I don't...
You know what I'm saying? Good Lord. It's a real nightmare because this man has cut off all avenues for any reunification.
So he thinks like he can, he thinks they can win.
Yeah. And I don't think, you know, the thing is, I don't, you know...
He hasn't had that moment with the computer where it says, shall we play a game yet? I mean, what? He doesn't understand that whole DMZ, the 38th pair, it's a no-win situation? Didn't go on?
I know, they're still at war, for all intents and purposes, because they never did settle.
Oh, yeah, this is a ceasefire.
Right, and so... But the thing is, I'm just saying that the current leader of South Korea is somebody to keep an eye on. He got issues, and they have problems in North Korea because they're in the middle of a power transfer or something.
Well, yeah, because the 25-year-old anointed son got promoted to like 4-star general, and that's apparently among the Korea watchers. That's apparently a big sign.
Yeah, and you know, we're sending some sort of battleship over there right now. I mean, hello? You know, and of course, I'm so cynical. I'm like, oh yeah, this is probably right about time for Bush, Obama, whoever the fuck it is, to start up some other war.
Little dog wagon, maybe?
I don't know. I don't know what's going on, but all I know is that
Yeah, cynicism's... I mean, I understand, Sandra. Cynicism's kind of painful sometimes, isn't it?
Well, this is, because I don't want to think that, but I don't want to know about... There's thousands of U.S. troops over there. I mean, and these right-wing people here are already talking about, let's go ahead and nuke them. They're already writing that kind of shit, so... I mean, it don't take but a minute for people over here to lose their damn minds about exercising our military powers.
All you've got to do is read the opening parts of Mark Twain's The War Prayer, and you understand that the American attitude toward a fresh new war never changes.
Because you have the usual, whoever that freak is at the National Review, I mean, they're all kind of jacking off somewhere about it, and it's just like... You know, they're so disgusting. These people right in front of a keyboard, it's always easy to yell, nuke some poor country when you're in front of a keyboard. I'm so sick of it. But you know, this whole thing about Obama was outraged. I mean, I love those sort of headlines. It's like, was he? You know, I don't even believe none of it. I just think, come on, you know?
David Axelrod, I am outraged.
And he had a secure, they said he had a situation room set up for it. You know, we had to hear about that, too. So we get to hear about President Not Sure exercise, putting his commander-in-chief hat on and prancing around about how outrageous.
Yeah, you got to wonder if Dim Leader loaned him a pair of the decision pants.
You know, and I really shouldn't be laughing, but anyway, the other one that's killing me is like, hello, that freak, the fake Taliban leader, are you kidding me with that? That's outrageous.
I didn't even know being there had been translated into Pashtun.
Oh, God. No, but it's incredible. And it's sort of like, if you were like the parent of some poor child of yours that was over there, and you reading this shit today, Bob. You know what I'm saying?
It's, would you be a little bit hot?
No, it's an outrage. It's like, what the F?
Because there was all that business in the story about how, you know, NATO forces had cleared pathways and blocked roads and made it safe for him to travel and put him on a plane and blah, 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 blah. And every time you read that kind of crap, you got to remember that, you know, there's some little E2 down there somewhere getting shot at.
Yeah, and it's just, isn't this more of some machinations of the ISI or whatever it's called?
Yeah, it is. It's an ISI inside job.
No, and it's just, and I don't mean to be laughing because it's really far from funny. It's horrific and horrifying, but it's just mind-numbing just how inept and the situation we have ourselves in over there. It is obviously a joke, and the fact that we're spending all this money and have all those people risking their lives over there while this fool, you know, dilly-dallies with turkeys that he's pardoning and nobody else, and just, I don't know what's going on. These wars.
Oh, I know, and I mean, you mentioned it, and I got to go there. Someday, and maybe it won't be within my lifetime or my children's, but someday I want a president out there who puts the turkey pardon to bed. I want that, and moment of shallowness with Bob Kincaid. But because, do you know what happened? You know, because you read the story about the turkey pardon, and apparently this year their names are Apple and Cider. Oh, Jesus. And apparently what happens is after they've been pardoned, they get sent, in this case, Apple and Cider got sent to the petting zoo or whatever at Mount Vernon. But the fact of the matter is, turkeys, such as many of us are going to consume tomorrow, are not intended to lead long and tranquil lives. They're not bred that way. They are bred to get fat, fast, and then die.
Yeah, and then they just, don't they pump them up with the various antibiotics and whatever else?
Oh, yeah, they're not, yeah, these aren't Tom turkeys, these are Arnold turkeys.
Well,
but the thing is, once they've been pardoned and sent over to Mount Vernon, to cut brush or whatever, they live for about a year, and then they die of some horrible turkey disease because they don't have the antibiotics and the hormones that they were bred with that got them to where they were. And I've just ruined everybody's Thanksgiving dinner.
Well, yeah, no, I mean gross. I know a lot of people, they try to get those grass-fed ones or, you know, some other way of feeding them ones, but you have to pay $500 a turkey.
Oh, yeah, they come out to a 20-pound turkey like we need here, winds up being $160.
No, yeah, really? Wow.
Yeah, no kidding.
I know they're high.
And you know, I got in all kinds of shit the other day on a message board for pointing out that it was my opinion that those are vanity birds.
What do you mean you got to do all this shit? What, you offended some?
All the vegans were on me like stink on tofu.
Why? What did they say to you? I mean, like,
how dare you call that vanity? That's ethics and morals.
You know what? You need to stop messing with them folks.
And then I got, and then, you know, I just asked questions, Sandra. I asked, you know, what do you say to a mother of four who wants to have Thanksgiving for her children because her children have been in school and they've been making little goddamn turkeys with their outlines of their hands? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. My niece showed me one that she had done that looked kind of hip-hop-ish, but yeah, it was working.
Yeah, you're right. And so that's, you know, you're going to eat turkey. And this person,
to that mother.
Yeah, and this person responds to me and says, well, then perhaps a loving mother should come to the conclusion that she cannot ethically feed her children meat and should provide a nutritious Thanksgiving Day meal comprised of perhaps a grain and nut loaf instead.
You know what I have for that person? I got a Michael Vick shirt for that person. I'm sorry. You know,
no, I go getting myself in trouble, and then, hey, Bob, let me get a shovel and help. Yeah.
No, listen, you talk to the wrong person, because I can't take them types much more than I can take the right-wing freaks at this point, you know, because they ain't operating in the real world. That gibberish.
I mean, I know... You know, I mean, if you heard any of Richard's conversation, you know, we went way down the garden path on freaking chocolate and pickles. Yeah, there ain't nothing on this planet that if you didn't grow it, ain't something wrong with it.
Yeah, at this point, I know, but that you offended those people so much so that they brought out ethics. I mean, oh, no, please, no.
Oh, I was called a meathead.
Oh, shit, the ultimate insult, I guess, from vegans. Wow, that's wicked brutal.
And, you know, all I was saying, and it's a real concern because I like organic meat. I like free-range stuff.
I had an organic cheeseburger made with that free-range. That shit is tasty.
Yes, it is, and it don't taste like the stuff that comes in the plastic roll from Wally World.
And it's like a tomato you grow in your garden.
There you go. But the thing is, as long as the stuff is, as long as the hamburger is $16 a pound...
You know what? You need to stop. But that's real, though. That is.
Yeah, Mama real. Ain't gonna put that in her hamburger helper.
No, and no, you're too right. And it's like, that's why I remember seeing them people strolling up to Whole Foods. I always thinking, damn, people shopping there, but they sure do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and guess who runs that?
No, but I'll be goddamn if I'm gonna walk out of there with a $5 peach. You see what I'm saying? No, I'm not joking.
That's your turn.
They will look at you and say, yeah, that'll be $5, please, in a straight face.
And you know where the money's going, because the guy who runs Whole Foods is a total right-wing horse's ass.
Yeah, he's terrible. I mean, I would never, ever, I never shop there because I just think the price is way just ridiculous. But also with that fool, no. And all those so-called progressives and who stroll in there all the time,
Well, you know, but then again, you got to figure that with that, you know, that, let's see, what was that, 80, yeah, that $8 a pound turkey, at least $2 a pound of that is paying for the psychologist who gave it 6 weeks of counseling before they killed it ethically and humanely. You know, that's that counseling certificate, that costs you something. We all know that the psychiatry ain't cheap.
Yeah, but the thing is, how do we get to the point where just sort of reasonable food is prohibitively priced that, you know, you can't even afford to buy it? I mean, that is just, it's just an outrage.
What?
I mean, it's like my mother, you know, she has a little garden, so, you know, I can, like, go in there, and she's like, where are my tomatoes? You know, I'm saying, yeah, I'm all over that, right? And whatever else she grows. Because it's just fickle, and there you go. But if you go...
But have I lost my mind, Sandra, when I'm sitting here actually worrying about Indian pickles? I mean, because that scares me, Indian pickles. Indian pickles and Argentinian cornflakes and Chilean grapes and, you know, lobsters from shrimp from Thailand, that shit scares me. Because that is indicia of a nation that cannot feed itself.
Yeah, and also with the, like, the ground beef at Wally World is like a combination of meat from all four corners. It is really disturbing. You see what I mean? You know, there's something really wrong about mixing meat from all...
Oh, the hamburger, I won't.
It's gross.
I won't, because it says, the label says this hamburger may contain, this hamburger may contain beef coming from Argentina, the United States, Mexico, Canada, or Australia. And, you know, that's, frankly, I'd feel better about the Australian beef.
Well, but it's just, no, the whole idea of it being, you know, it's...
But it's all been aggregated. It ain't, you know, it's like blended scotch.
No, it's horrible. I mean, it's way out of whack.
Blended beef. It's got to be low rent.
And also, I mean, ever since they destroyed the unionization of the abattoirs, you know, it's all really suspect. I mean, those used to be decent-paying jobs. And I'm a big believer in if you're getting paid a decent wage, you put a little bit more effort and pride into it.
Right.
Why should I think that some meat that's being produced in some slave-wage shop in Minnesota or wherever the hell they are, you can imagine. They treat the people no different than they treat the animals.
You know, I remember way back, Sandra, when I saw the video footage of that guy picking up the cow who couldn't stand up.
Yeah, it's the...
And he picks it up with a forklift. I remember all the way back to that thinking, you know, I'm guessing that guy's not a union guy.
No, everything's cruel. You're treated like a piece of shit. Why wouldn't you treat the animals the same? You know what I'm saying? It's the environment of cruelty in all layers. So the product, as far as I'm concerned, is going to be accordingly. You know, it's just going to be a bad product. And I'm not saying that I'm a vegetarian, because I'm not. But I try my best to, you know, eat a lot less meat.
Well, that's just good. That's just good diet. It's not supposed to...
And if I just can find, like, once in a while, some grass-fed this, that, another, yeah, I'm all over it. But the turkey, all that, I'll probably have a few slices tomorrow, but I'm aware of how nasty the sort of meat situation in this country is. It's horrible.
No, without a doubt. I mean, Ferg loves to try stuff, my son.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in the grocery store the other day, and he saw a vacuum-sealed package of, like, probably 2/3 of a pound of organic bison.
Mm.
He's like, Dad, will you buy that for me? I'd love to try it. And I said, I'd love for you to try it. It's quite delicious. But I said, no, I'm not paying $10 for that. Because it's what it was. And you know, until such time as we change the dynamic in this country about how we feed ourselves. You know what? All that vanity food ain't gonna change a damn bit.
Well, you can't even get potato on the WIC thing, which I recently found out, which I was quite shocked. You know that WIC provides nutrition for
women and infant children.
45%, though, Bob. Did you know that?
No.
Okay, that's a lot. So the list of foods on there, you know, potato is not even on there. I don't know. I just was sort of shocked. You know, I'm like...
I got finished today with our Thanksgiving shopping because there's always a little bit list of stuff. Oh, shit, I forgot that. So today it was a bag of potatoes and cranberry sauce.
Oh, okay.
You know, the stuff that retains the shape of the can. I just love it.
Yep.
So I'm over at my little grocery store, and I'm looking at the potatoes. And I've got three choices. A bag of potatoes from Michigan, a bag of potatoes from Wisconsin, and a bag of potatoes from Idaho. Yeah, Idaho potatoes, well. No, hell no. There won't be any Idaho potatoes on my table, because I are a liberal. So I figured, okay, I'm good. You know, it was a toss-up between Wisconsin and Michigan, and okay, I'll take the Wisconsin spuds. But you know, that's because I'm a loon, Sandra. Who else does that?
Well, I'm always looking at potatoes, fisheye, because, you know, you have some potatoes sitting around and they don't ever sprout. You're like, oh, God, it's been irradiated. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And there's a, you know, it's just sort of never ending, which reminds me, did you see, it was just an article a while ago of this woman, or somebody did a whole picture of a Happy Meal. I swear to God, that lady.
Yeah, the 6 month and it didn't rot.
135 days, and I swear it didn't look much different from day one.
Well, that's because the bread ain't really bread, and the hamburger is actually more accurately described by our buddy Tony Bourdain, who calls them gray discs of meat.
Okay, but that, you know, to me, I just was like, I couldn't, I just thought, oh my God, it doesn't even decompose. And people put that inside them, you know, and it's just, A, you know, it's quite expensive, that rubbish, too. I was amazed by the cost.
Right, but because it's on the 99-cent menu, they never bother to tell you, well, it's on the 99-cent menu because there's not really any food there.
Well, no, but it's, yeah, it's just really just, but anyway, I'm just sort of drifting. And what I also wanted to ask you, did you hear about those poor miners? I mean, they're all dead in New Zealand. Do you know about that?
Yeah, I do, and I haven't.
They had a second explosion, and they basically are saying, oh, well, there's no hope. And it's like 30 people or whatever, 29 people.
Again, and don't think the irony was lost on me. Again, for some reason, 29 people. 29 in Upper Big Branch, 29 in New Zealand.
Yeah, I was just like, damn. And the one in New Zealand, that was just, you know, brutal because they had the first explosion and people were all upset because they wouldn't attempt to go in between the window, right?
Right.
And they waited too late and a second explosion happened. They said they couldn't go because there was too much methane or whatever the first time and the thing blew up.
But was there anything to indicate that they survived the first blast?
That's what they're worried about now, see. And that's what they're looking to find out because if that's the case, you know, it's going to be some hell to pay, from what I can tell, the families and, you know, various other advocates. And
but, you know, it's just another reminder, Sandra, that, you know, we're fooling with, we persist in fooling with stuff that should have been put to bed a long time ago. You know, for God's sakes, Edison was talking about solar power in the flipping 20s.
Oh, yeah, and New Zealand has like, one of the, I guess, better safety records in the world or something.
Yeah, but anywhere on this planet that there's coal, Sandra.
No, exactly.
You can't get it out of the ground fast enough because China wants it.
Yeah, no. I'm just saying. So I'm agreeing with you that no matter what the safety record is, obviously it's a, you know, it's a really dangerous product.
You know, I don't know if you've been following it or not, but Massey is sort of teetering on the brink of some sort of sale.
And, is that right?
Yeah. They have formed a Jesus, please, can't we sell this dog off committee inside their corporate structure, inside their board structure.
Well, aren't they responsible for, like, all the deaths in the last 10 years? I was reading
very nearly
about
well, between them and Bob Murray.
I mean, it's just incredible and that they're still an entity. So who are they trying to sell themselves to?
The Indians or the Russians? Now, and I don't know that there's any truth to it, but I heard a rumor the other day talking to one of my neighbors that the blasting is, may very well start up again here within a mile or so of my house, and that this time it will be the Indians.
Okay, so you're telling me that now it's going to be owned by some Indian corporation is going to have...
Or a Russian corporation.
Or a Russian... sending your folks down to... Listen, I don't even know what to say about that. It's just so wrong.
Oh, but no, that no, Sandra, let's get something squared away real quick. It's not a Ghana. This outfit, I think they're called ArcelorMittal or something like that. Mittal is the last word of the two-word structure. They already... a guy named Jim Justice, who is a massive oligarch here in southern West Virginia, sold out all of his holdings to the Russians. The Russians are actually digging coal in West Virginia right now. The Indians are digging coal in eastern Kentucky right now.
Well, is there a chance that there will be weaker advocacy in government if that was to go down?
No, because they're already members of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, I'm quite certain. And they're a member of the National Mining Association. And you know, where Congress critters are concerned, ownership transfers.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know. I guess just wishful thinking on my part. But, I mean, what's going to happen in Pennsylvania with all that natural gas there?
Well, in Pennsylvania, in New York, in West Virginia, in Kentucky, it's all over the East Coast.
No, but apparently it's it's like the largest amount almost in the world. Some crazy amount.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, it's nuts.
It's huge.
There's so much stuff that, as far as coal and oil and gas are concerned, to keep your eye on. You can get lost in about a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But the water issues related to the so-called Marcellus Shale may well, in a century's time, make it impossible to live without some sort of massive technological infusion of infrastructure, make it impossible to live here.
Well, see, I don't mean
like because it's not pleasant. I mean can't live here because everything is poisoned. Yeah, the water, everything.
Right, I understand. And what I don't understand though is the amount of energy that is needed to get access to this energy. You see, I can never get past that because I was looking at.
Well, see, that's the thing. You can't get past it, but the other side doesn't even bother looking at it. Because, you know, we're going to have us a coal to liquids plant in southern West Virginia, and Jay Rockefeller and Joe Manchin done promised.
No, but if you have to use all the fresh water on the eastern seaboard to get at this energy, won't that cancel each other out, or am I just...
Well, it only cancels it out for the plebs and the proles.
Oh, the people again, damn it. What am I thinking?
Because, you know, our betters will live in some sort of geodesic biodomes, and it'll all be Logan's Run and, you know, and crappy thin polyester outfits.
Yeah, no, it's easy to sort of drift that way because the way the Earth is being just sort of brutalized, you have to wonder, well, they can't escape the poison either, you know, except for they're probably building, you know, self-contained, like you said, bubbles all over the place.
Well, you know, they'll deal with it by, I don't know, putting up desalinization plants. Just like Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, no, it's...
Because, you know, drinking the ocean, that's a real good idea.
Oh, yeah, no, that's what they do over in Dubai, actually. Along with making snow. I mean, how disgusting is that?
Oh, that place drives me crazy.
No, it's incredible. But listen, so Tom DeLay was found guilty. Is he looking at jail or what?
You know, sentencing is a separate animal. They won't do that today.
Could he possibly look at jail?
Oh, there's prison time involved. It's money laundering and fraud, I think.
Damn.
And in fact, you know, I mean, it's Texas. They, you know, I think they still still shoot horse thieves there.
Oh, listen, you killed me because I had sent you that, like, I guess you read the original, but that one, the Rush thing, are you kidding me with that?
Oh, I want to go find that guy.
That is outrageous that he didn't say that driving an OxyContin...
Don't mix. but you know how my sad, cynical mind is, Sandra. Where I go next with that is, let's watch this guy not run and hide. Let's watch this guy stand up for the words that he put out there, and it doesn't matter how many ditto heads come after him, he's not going to run away from it.
Oh, you mean, are you talking about that guy who did that drunk phone thing?
No, the guy who wrote this blog post, he's not going to run away from it like most Democrats do. One of the most inspiring things about the early part of the Obama presidency is when they decided that they were going to declare Rush Limbaugh to be the head of the Republican Party.
It all started out
and
so
make
nice.
Him own it.
It all started out so nice. You're right.
But you know what? They were running away from that as quickly as they could.
I don't know. Yeah. No, it's incredible. But that was funny, though. I mean, you know, we have to find our little joys where we can, Bob.
Oh, like I said, I would like to be there at the sentencing hearing.
Well, anyway, listen, did you happen to look at that speech, you know, I was talking about the pardoning. I didn't realize that that was the case with Obama and how he has an issue.
I had no idea until I saw that. Barack Obama has to, and if he waits until December the 20th, Barack Obama will have gone longer than Dim Leader did in issuing any sort of commutation or pardon sentencing-wise.
What's up with that?
And he's already turned down hundreds of them.
That's what I'm saying. What is that about? Do you have any sort of quick... I mean, because to me, I was just like...
Well, you know me, Sandra. I write everything off to the fact that the administration and the DLC Democrats are scared to damn death of what that OxyContin junkie will say about them next. Or maybe Glenn Beck will get out his puppets or something. And it, for some reason, makes them wet their shorts.
Well, Obama, he really can't stay black. I'll tell you. That is the gist of it to me. I think that fool is running as fast as he can from his shade, and he can't run that fast because it's absurd that this man ain't using his presidential powers. I'm like, why are you president again? And all the expectations of folks about it, and it's just incredible. I mean, that story there just stunned me. I hadn't given it much thought, I have to say, but then when I read it, I thought, well, that don't make no sense.
Well, it doesn't, and you got to think that there are some people who are unjustly convicted out there. But again, if you're afraid of being called an Islamo-communistic Muslim who loves crime and pals around with terrorists, if that's what motivates you, if that fear is what motivates you, Sandra.
And don't forget being called an eggnog, too.
Well, that's... But see, they don't even have to do that anymore. It's just like,
I know. I'm just saying that's how ridiculous it is, though. It's like, you know, they knew that he was black when he got elected. I'm just lost on the scampering on the administration's part. It's just unbelievable.
Some of it is downright Chappelle-esque, if you will.
Yeah, no, it's bad. It's real bad, but anyway, I don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm looking for that Obama moment where I'm Wayne Brady. And
yeah. Oh, shit. No, you know what? Wow. Yeah, I don't think so.
No, and you know, Marty out there in your neck of the woods, in reference to my cheesy Logan's Run reference, said somehow I doubt our betters will subject themselves to carousel at age 30. Oh, no. No, that's for us. Did you see the death panel story, Sandra? They're really
which one? No, I missed that.
Oh, there really are honest to Jesus death panels out there. This is just a sadder than hell story. A woman in Florida.
Oh, is this the liver transfer thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw the headline.
She was forced into a privatized. She was on Medicaid.
Right.
But she was forced into a privatized, administered program in the Jeb Bush administration in Florida. 37 years old, died last Friday, waiting for a liver transplant that Medicaid would have paid for, but the administrator of the Medicaid plan, the privatized administrator, refused to pay for.
Well, I mean, this is what we all have to look forward to as far as I can tell, you know, as they sort of bring in these austerities and they pick off the last of the entitlement. That's outrageous. Wow. Wow. No, I didn't know the woman was only 37. Are you kidding?
Yeah. And, you know, her daddy, your heart just bleeds for him. He said her liver was gone. There was no more left. She needed that transplant 2 weeks ago. If they did it months ago, my daughter would be alive now. And it's not because, you know, Steve Jobs got her liver. It's because had there been livers available, and perhaps there were, she couldn't have one because the for-profit administrator said no. And, you know, liver transplants aren't exactly experimental anymore.
Well, no, they're fairly frequent now, but wow, that's, this is down in, well, I told you what Florida is going to be.
Yeah.
It's definitely going to be Somalia with cable.
But the scary thing is that the Kaiser Family Foundation did some research this year, and they noted that all states except Alaska and Wyoming, how ironic that it's Alaska, all states except Alaska and Wyoming have some portion of their Medicaid population enrolled in managed care. which means that there is no public accountability. There is no governmental accountability. You can't do a damn thing when they say, we don't pay, you go die. That's 48 out of 50 states, if my math is correct.
Wow.
They have succeeded in privatizing some portion of Medicaid in 48 out of 50 states.
And then the whole idea, too, will be to continue along that same vein, no doubt. I mean, I got to get together with my mother to try to go over some of the BS they're trying to pull with the next year's business with Medicare. You know, she's 72, but there's some sort of tricky business that's coming up that I've been trying to read about so she don't get caught out, you know?
Yeah.
And this is some changes that...
And yet the morons who voted on November 2nd were mad at the Democrats because of Medicare Advantage? Medicare Advantage is what's going to wind up killing people.
That was a poison pill that Bush got in there, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, it's incredible. Listen, I'll let you go, but it's just one other thing I wanted to mention. Did you see that the IMF, they sure enough told the Irish to cut their minimum wage and cut the dole, but also don't raise the corporate tax?
Yeah, isn't that funny how that works?
It's incredible. Anyway, they think that the whole thing might go because they're worried about...
Yeah, all of a sudden Great Britain holding on to the pound doesn't look so silly anymore, does it?
No, but it really looks silly, though, because Britain now has to cough up $7 billion towards this bailout. That's the thing that I think is quite interesting.
Right, to bail out of... Yeah, to bail out a currency that, you know...
Yeah, the euro is just in so much trouble. Apparently, Belgium now is also at risk because, you know, they don't have a government right now.
Well, Belgium may split into two countries in the next couple of years.
Yeah, but right now they don't have a functioning government because they're trying to form it.
Right.
And apparently their bond spreads have, like, jumped up, and the market is looking at them now. It is such a nightmare over there. Anyway, I gotta go.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving, Sandra.
Yeah, you too.
Bye. Bye now. It is scary. I mean, what happens if the euro takes a powder? As it may very well very soon. By the way, a couple of notes coming in from Robert in Australia. He says, all of our best beef goes overseas from Australia. And on desalinization, he also says, we have a plant here in Sydney. Dry continent, growing population in Sydney. As per usual, the bright sparks who built it put the seawater intake about a kilometer from the Bondi sewage outlet. So guess what? People on Sydney's south side found out just recently they're actually drinking. You know, how far... This is movie night, isn't it? How far are we from Soylent Green as people? Because Sydney's south side's water is poople. Well, before I ruin another meal, I'm going back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Happy Thanksgiving, Bob.
And to you too, Jim.
You know, it's interesting. You've gone all over the board tonight. Last thing you mentioned was Belgium splitting into two parts.
Yep.
Well, the northern part of Belgium is are the Flemings.
Right.
And the southern part of Belgium are the Walloons. And, of course, Belgium was put together back in 1832 by the British. So it's an amalgam country. But who knows?
But, you know, and over the years, every now and then the Germans start feeling a little froggy, and the first thing they want to do is go for a walk through Belgium. The geography sort of makes that, desirable? And Belgium was created, was it not, as, a sort of a buffer state?
Exactly. Exactly. And, of course, Belgium would be a natural path to... hegemony on the Western European seaboard. But, you know, what's really got me concerned tonight, and I sent you an email, is this Korean situation.
For good reason.
Well, it's very serious. Very serious. I mean, we have firepower over there, and in North Korea, do you know how many men they could push over that border within 2 hours?
More than anything that we're prepared to counter by a factor of probably 100.
10 million.
Okay, then by a factor of a million.
And you have, of course, have North Korea that's virtually on the verge of starvation. And you have this new Korean chief of state who is the grandson of Kim Il-sung, son of Kim Jong-il, and you know exactly how crazy these people are. And, of course, they have Taipei missiles that can reach Tokyo. And, you know, this is almost like Europe in 1914.
And all of this posturing that apparently we're engaging in is meant to encourage the Chinese to rein in the North Koreans, but the ugly newsflash may be that the Chinese quietly say, listen, we know they're nuts.
Well,
but by the same token, I think Sandra brings up a good point in that, you know, the guy in South Korea is a real, live, honest-to-God right-winger, and he may like the idea.
Well, what is this a recipe for?
August 1914.
Barbara Tuchman, all over again, my friend. I mean, this thing could explode any minute.
And you just hope that there are cooler heads prevailing than the ones that were present then. Although, you know, that crowd thought that they were pretty cool, didn't they? The August 1914 bunch.
Well, basically, it was on the German side. It was going to be lunch in Paris and dinner in London. And, of course, on the other side, it was the other nation's capital, or either dinner or lunch. I mean, this is serious. I mean, this is one of the more serious things we have faced in quite a long time. I mean, you talk about the full gap in Western Europe back during the days of the Cold War. You're going to talk about a miniaturized full gap that is coming through the South Korean border.
Well, has the response been appropriate, do you think?
I don't know. I can't really. I cannot answer that question. But you know, we don't have a John Kennedy in the White House right now, who could possibly neutralize the situation. We have leadership, which, in my opinion, is not capable of making correct decisions, and the whole breach of time between an emergency action message coming from the National Command Authority now, as opposed to then. Things are so much quicker now than they were then. You know, let's go back to the Cuba Missile Crisis, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In order to stop World War III, back in 1962, Radio Moscow had to get on the air and say, okay, we will do this, okay? And we will stop the situation. And the guy who was trying to get to Radio Moscow was hung up in an elevator and had to pass the message to Radio Moscow through an elevator boy to get it up to the broadcaster. He was stuck in an elevator. Things are a lot more quickly done now. And, of course, we have surface ships there, one surface ship that I know of. God only knows how many submarines that are ready to go.
Well, no, I mean, you don't just send a nuclear aircraft carrier wandering off somewhere. They've got a whole task force that accompanies them.
Exactly. And, so, you know, a lot of these people have in their minds, and I'm talking about the North Koreans, better a horrible ending than a horror without end. Because that's what life in North Korea has been with many of these people, a horror without end. And this gives me cause for great concern. I may be overreacting.
Well, no, there are other factors that play into this. The Stanford nuclear scientist who was recently invited over for for, you know, a lunch and a spot of tea in Pyongyang, where they showed him their, holy smokes, this is really a nice facility, nuclear, you know, uranium enrichment plant. They didn't, you know, they didn't do it out of loneliness.
No, they didn't.
North Korea has some paranoia, and some of it is justified. You know,
they have a lot of paranoia.
You know, we think that we're just trying to get over George W. Bush. He painted a target on them in 2001. And you don't take that real kindly. And, you know, maybe they never read the Melian dialogue out in Thucydides. Or maybe they did.
Well, whatever about Thucydides, but I'm talking about back then, that Kim Jong-il and, you know, this man was absolutely crazy. And I think some of these people just don't realize exactly the ramifications of, well, they do realize it, but they don't care. I don't know. Like I say, better a horrible ending than a horror without end. And this is exactly the type of situation that led to August 1914. And, of course, you know, all these nations are tied together militarily, economically. You've got India, Pakistan. All these nations with nuclear capability. And not to mention, as I said before, North Korea with Taipei missiles that could reach not only Tokyo, but also the eastern seaboard of this country. We've got some serious thinking to do about this.
And you've got Sarah Palin running around talking about our North Korean allies.
Worried about Sarah Palin. I'm worried about the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I'm worried about some of the military people in here who think that, you know, these things are not only sustainable, but survivable.
No, we don't still think that, do we?
Yes, we do. The spirit of Curtis LeMay is not dead. No, sir. I've been around this stuff, my friend. I've heard these people talk.
That's a harrowing thought, Jim.
Well, yes, it is a harrowing thought, and you know it worries me considerably. Today, I was padding about the house of, you know, putting together Christmas decorations and stuff like that, and trying to get my mind off of it. But this is the situation, and we talked about this stuff before over the years in which we have been correspondents through your internet medium, as well as your back in the days when you used to broadcast in the terrestrial realm.
Yeah, because, and I recall those conversations, Jim, because there's a whole aspect of, well, there goes the neighborhood about all of this.
There are actually people there who really believe that such actions are not only survivable, sustainable, but also desirable. And I hope the cooler heads will prevail. But, you know, this is a very complex equation. It is much more complex, if not equally complex, if you want to be optimistic, that any situation was in any type of Western Europe situation back during the days of the Cold War. That's what I'm trying to say. Maybe not too well, because I'm scared.
And not for yourself, I sense.
No, for the entire world. I mean,
so North Korea lights up somebody, we light up North Korea, China takes umbrage at that, India takes umbrage at China. Party.
Bob, it's like a room filled full of mousetraps. Each mousetrap has a ping pong ball on it. and you throw one ping pong ball into that room, and you have a chain reaction. That's what I'm scared of.
I don't think your misgiving or your fears are
unfounded.
No, they're not unfounded. And you know, sending that carrier group over there, to be quite honest, I would have misgivings about it if George was doing it, and I've got misgivings about it now.
I mean, I can remember the days of Mao Zedong saying, you know, so what if we lose $100 billion? We've still got $200 million left. I'm talking about the Oriental mind versus the Occidental mind.
Well, also, and just plain old numbers. We, the entire population of the United States and Canada are a rounding error.
Yeah, they are.
And, you know, Grant, as far back as Richmond, understood that, you know, if they've got 10,000 men and 20,000 bullets, and I've got 20,000 men and 40,000 bullets, I win.
Well, that's the whole
no matter how hard they fight.
That's the whole thing about war today. You're not talking about living human beings. You're not talking about actual destruction and the ramifications of that destruction, not to mention the types of aftermath that would follow. I mean, you have actual people there who sit there and look at a computer, and they look at what the computer is telling them in terms of acceptable losses. And I'm not trying to go back to War Games back in 1983 with that movie that...
No, that was...
But, I mean, you know, it's very true. It is very true. Back in 1983, that was very relevant. It really was. And, of course, the message of that movie was the only way to win is not to play. But these people, I fear... are willing to play. And in chess, it's called a gambit.
Yeah, there's always somebody willing to take cards in the game.
And it only takes the wrong person. And when you consider the leadership of, say, North Korea and South Korea...
you got a whole couple of buildings full of the wrong people.
Yeah, I would not like to really... have to sit in a psychiatrist's office and even have a conversation with these people.
I don't disagree, Jim. I don't disagree.
Because I, in my opinion, think they're crazy as hell. And like I say, there are those who really believe in acceptability without any form or sense of culpability. Or what would follow behind. I mean, that situation over there is at 210 Fahrenheit. All it has to do is go two more degrees to 212.
You're right.
And
that is a frightening thing to ponder.
And the mistakes that could occur, I mean, our systems of defense are very well oiled, and they're very well planned out, but they are not infallible. And it could take the misreading of a message, the lack of transmission of a message between one element and another, and I'm talking about the National Command Authority here, their situations over there.
Yeah, we're talking about lethal terminal typographical errors and such like.
Exactly. I mean, this isn't Hollywood.
There may not be an elevator boy.
There may not be. And I don't think about this all the time. If I did, I would be absolutely crazy. And maybe some people who listen to me think I am crazy.
Well, you got to wonder how this plays, Jim, with the right-wing yokels who think that it would be better off not to sign the START Treaty, for instance.
Exactly.
I mean, is this a wake-up call to them, or do they just, you know, they don't get their hair mussed?
They don't get their hair mussed, I'm afraid.
All the same, Jim, I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Well, same to you, and I'm very happy that you had good reports last night from your doctor, and let's hope that things will calm down and we'll be able to enjoy the holidays. And who knows, after the first of the year, things will calm down in Washington. People will begin to believe, you know, what is real, what is possible, and what is best for our country. And most of all right now, what is best for our world.
Jim, that's not a hope, that's a prayer. And I don't mean that negatively.
It is a prayer. Okay, you take care and God bless.
You too. Take care, Jim. Happy Thanksgiving. Bye now.
Bye.
And that, of course, is our buddy Jim, who brings a lot of life to bear in that sort of analysis. You know, it's hard not to think about the kind of stuff that Jim's describing and not have this, well, if you're the kind of person I am, sort of playing on a reel in the back of your mind.
There are one or two points I'd like to make, if I may.
Go ahead, General.
One, our hopes for recalling the 843rd bombing are quickly being reduced to a very low order of probability. Two, in less than 15 minutes from now, the Ruskies will be making radar contact with the planes. Three, when they do, they are going to go absolutely ape, and they're going to strike back with everything they got. Four, if, prior to this time, we have done nothing further to suppress their retaliatory capabilities, we will suffer virtual annihilation. Now, five, if, on the other hand, we were to immediately launch an all-out and coordinated attack on all their airfields and missile bases, we'd stand a damn good chance of catching them with their pants down. Hell, we got a fireball on missile superiority as it is. We could easily assign three missiles to every target and still have a very effective reserve force for any other contingency. Six, an unofficial study which we undertook of this eventuality indicated that we would destroy 90% of their nuclear capabilities. We would therefore prevail and suffer only modest and acceptable civilian casualties from the remaining force, which would be badly damaged and uncoordinated.
General, it is the avowed policy of our country never to strike first with nuclear weapons.
Well, Mr. President, I would say that General Ripper has already invalidated that policy.
That was not an act of national policy, and there are still alternatives left open to us.
Mr. President, we are rapidly approaching a moment of truth, both for ourselves as human beings and for the life of our nation. Now, truth is not always a pleasant thing, but it is necessary now to make a choice, to choose between two admittedly regrettable, but nevertheless distinguishable post-war environments. One, where you got 20 million people killed, and the other, where you got 150 million people killed.
You're talking about mass murder, General, not war.
Mr. President, I'm not saying we wouldn't get our hair mussed, but I do say no more than 10 to 20 million killed, tops, depending on the breaks.
I will not go down in history as the greatest mass murderer since Adolf Hitler.
Perhaps it might be better, Mr. President, if you were more concerned with the American people than with your image in the history books.
General Turgeson, I think I've heard quite sufficient from you. Thank you very much.
What do you think? Does General Buck Turgidson or his illegitimate offspring still wander the halls of the Pentagon? What do you want to bet that he doesn't? Acceptable losses. Wouldn't say we're not going to get our hair mussed. There's a reason that film is a classic. Because it describes a mindset that has obtained in this country and may yet to this day obtain, and if you believe Jim, and I have no reason not to, does still obtain in this country. I'm more than open to evidence not. You know,
David in Tennessee, noting that Fox News, Radio Rwanda, has Nepal, what's his name, Judge Napolitano, and that Schnur screaming for an attack on North Korea. And they're not the only ones. And then you have our own war planners, the guys that are drawing a check from you and me, and they're so damn detached today that the decision process is not that far afield from the decision process such as folks tended to engage in during the Cold War. And understand that North Korea, South Korea is a Cold War that has tried from time to time desperately to get hot. Kate writing in, she says, tell Jim he's not alone in his fear. I've been through all of this for decades, watching the dots connect. This situation is much more dire than we're hearing about. The population are focused on shit closer to home, like the Palin family. I'm assuming that TV and radio reporters, readers, talking head talent, aren't educated enough to actually report if they're bought and paid for like our government. Sandra also providing an article from the Washington Post. And insofar as it comes from Jimmy Carter, it's probably worth paying attention to. Because remember, this is the guy who managed to be the only president between him and now not to get us into some sort of armed conflict somewhere. Jimmy Carter writes today, no one can completely understand the motivations of the North Koreans, but it is entirely possible that their recent revelation of their uranium enrichment centrifuges and Pyongyang's shelling of a South Korean island Tuesday are designed to remind the world that they deserve respect in negotiations that will shape their future. Ultimately, the choice for the United States may be between diplomatic niceties and avoiding a catastrophic confrontation. Dealing effectively with North Korea has long challenged the United States. We know that the state religion of this secretive society is Juche, which means self-reliance and avoidance of domination by others. The North's technological capabilities under conditions of severe sanctions and national poverty are surprising. Efforts to display its military capability through the shelling of Yongpyong and weapons tests prove anger and a desire for retaliation. Meanwhile, our close diplomatic and military ties with South Korea make us compliant with its leaders' policies. That's not a nice recipe, is it? Go and read this. It's at the Washington Post. He closes by saying, Pyongyang has sent a consistent message that during direct talks with the United States, it is ready to conclude an agreement to end its nuclear programs, put them all under IAEA inspection, and conclude a permanent peace treaty to replace the temporary ceasefire of 1953. We should consider responding to this offer. The unfortunate alternative is for North Koreans to take whatever actions they consider necessary to defend themselves from what they claim to fear most, a military attack supported by the United States along with efforts to change the political regime. You see, that's why I mentioned Thucydides' Malian dialogue. Great nations do what they wish. Small nations do what they must. And the thing is, it's the small nation that determines what the definition of must is. Robert writing from Australia, do you recall the film Failsafe? Yes, I do, which came out at about the same time as Dr. Strangelove. Henry Ford plays the president desperately trying to talk down the Soviet premier when a U.S. air wing begins an accidental attack on the Soviet Union. Walter Matthau plays the numbers guy who's more than happy to attack Russia, ticking off the number of people killed like the statistics he sees them as. The film ends, of course, with Moscow being destroyed and the president ordering New York to also be destroyed to avoid a war. Emily noting, with the North-South ordeal, the North didn't fire first. The South was doing their war games, and they've been doing these for the past 10 years now, at least. The South did tell the North, but each year they get closer and closer to the North. There's a border that the South recognizes, but the North doesn't. I forget the name of it, she says. The South was very close to an island of the North's, and each year they get closer and closer to the North as it sees how far they can get away with.
So it seems what happens is this whole situation with who recognizes what in terms of borders. So maybe now both sides can sit down and finally decide what they recognize, so no more of this stupid stuff where people have to die. Wouldn't that be intelligent? Brinksmanship. I guess it's kind of like the junkie's buzz. You have to use a little more to get that feeling you got when you first started, when it was, hey kid, the first one's free. But the problem with brinksmanship is it's not like dividing numbers in mathematics where you can never actually get to zero. With brinksmanship, sooner or later, you get to the brink. Quarter past the hour, and lots of phones lit up. Let's see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Just a little humorous note on that piss Christ thing that I think you'll find interesting. A lot of people don't make note of it, is that it was actually an optical illusion, and it was a psychological experiment. And guess who failed? I was reading about that.
Oh, you mean the wing nuts?
No, yes, the wing nuts. But most people do not mention that that was just an optical experiment that the artist put. He said the cross didn't even touch any urine or anything. He said he just wanted to see how people would react. That was the whole point of that art exhibit for people.
Well, that's actually how art works, because you don't put art out there to see, you know. I don't care what kind of art it is. It's to see how people will react. Art is designed to generate a response.
Right, but I mean, this was a this was the whole intent of it. I mean, there were when you talk about art, you're talking about on different levels. I mean, that was his whole intent on doing that, to see psychologically in their mind how they would react to that if they didn't know the truth behind it. So I found that kind of interesting.
But the thing is, David, they would have had a hissy anyway. Well, he's making okay, so he said there wasn't in there. He's still making it look like it is, and that's just
I
as bad.
I know.
Maybe he didn't understand the right-wing mindset.
I did want to touch base on the whole thing with the turkeys and the issues. And, Bob, I just shake my head at this, because I think vegans and vegetarians, I'm sorry if I insult anyone or anything like that, I think you people have been watching Disney too much and watching Bambi. Because the truth is, Bob, I don't know why we don't teach this in school more, but hunters are necessary, people. Don't you understand that? Hunters are necessary. They're necessary in the forests. They're necessary in every country in the land. Do you know what happens if we don't have hunters? Come on, Bob, you know this, I know this, but a lot of people who live in vegetarian land, they don't know this.
That the land exceeds carrying capacity and you wind up with an extinction event?
Exactly. And you know the other thing is that people don't notice, the thing about the turkeys? It's the same thing. They produce fast. You know how I know that, people? I'll tell you how I know that. Because my parents actually have turkeys on their land right now. And they reproduce like mothers. So what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to just let them go free? We don't have any euthanizing drugs, people. You're going to have to shoot them. I mean, this isn't Bambi. I don't know why people put that in their mind, but they need to be told that in an early age, Bob, because immediately, you know,
I was dealing with all that stuff, David, I was told that chickens and cattle are sentient.
I mean, it's ridiculous, though. I mean, the whole thing is the whole thing for people to understand is you can't just eliminate hunting and killing animals. It's impossible. If we took
well, right, because there's this fantasy. If there's this fantasy world that, you know, if the vegans could just get their way and we all stopped eating meat, we'd have these happy little lovely herds of cattle just wandering the plains, being happy cattle.
I mean, I live in Maine, people. Let me tell you what would happen if I lived in Maine. Why do you think we have moose licenses and deer licenses? Some of these vegetarians, Bob, I swear to you, they need to go to hunting class, because I went to hunting class. You know what they told me? They told me that reproduction would go ballistic, and they're right. It would go ballistic in every city.
Well, there's a reason that I can't have a garden anymore. There's a herd of about 35 does.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about the bucks, because, you know, except for during the rut, the does and the bucks don't run together. It's, you know, girls club, boys club. And what happens is that during the growing season, that herd of does walks right through my garden. The last garden I had, they ate down 125 tomato plants.
Yeah.
8 rows of corn, 4 rows of okra, and 72 hot pepper plants. They ate everything.
And that's, you know, that's the...
But, you know, they're being vegetarian, so maybe that's okay.
They're being vegetarian. You know, that's the thing that is really just insane in our society, is the fact that people think that, oh, because deer are out there in the wild and they don't have guns or they don't have weapons and they don't eat meat, that somehow they're peaceful and they'll be docile if we'll just leave them alone. That's not going to happen if you just, if you have a whole society just overrun by deer. Do you understand? Why don't, see, that's the thing about...
See, here in the hills, we call them rats with antlers.
Rats with antlers. I mean, my God, Bob, if we listen to vegetarians, and I hope people just shoot off email after email on this.
Oh, yeah, because I can afford to lose listeners. Thanks.
No, not that. Because they need to hear it, Bob. They need to understand. If we listen to you on moose, rabbits, quail, birds, or everything, do you realize how we would suffocate the world? Do you think that's some propaganda that I'm putting forward? Just do a little math.
Well, no.
That's all you need to do.
Right. It's like, okay, sorry, Sarah Palin reference. Remember, she wanted the wolves taken down because they were killing too many moose-esses, and moose hunting is good for the economy in Alaska.
Yeah.
What? No, that's crazy. That is just simply crazy. And, you know, humans contribute to it because around here there's a mindset that goes with the whole Scots-Irish thing, David, that, oh, my God, I can shoot one anytime I want to. And they will literally take a Gerber baby bottle nipple and fit it over the end of a 30-30 carbine and go road hunting. I mean, it's like a Johnny Cash song. They shoot them in the field just to watch them die because there's that much animus against them because they have been so overbred and overprotected. And, you know, here in the hills, we're in one of those bring in the mongooses to deal with the snakes, now what do you do with the mongooses thing? Because
right.
We have wild turkeys in wild profusion, and wild turkeys are some of the best foragers in the woods. And they will eat the deer into starvation.
See, that's exactly the point. And, you know, the problem is, Bob, is you have all these organizations that they feed this propaganda. And I'm sorry if people can't see that, but it is propaganda. And they put this, they completely just diss hunters. They disrespect them. They insult them. They insult people who are meat eaters. People, meat eating.
No. It's people who are omnivores, David. Let's get that clear.
Yeah.
I mean, since it's the Thanksgiving show and everything.
Yeah.
You know, I eat rutabagas, I eat potatoes, I eat oranges,
yeah,
I eat apples, and I eat pigs and cows and chicken and eggs and cheese, and because I'm
right.
a human. And, you know, we don't have the sense of smell, we don't have the eyesight, we don't have the claws, we don't have the ripping teeth of a lion or a tiger. All we've got are these big, unwieldy brains that let us come up with ways to eat whatever it takes to keep us alive.
Exactly, and I just wanted to mention that this Thanksgiving, and before I go, I mean, the whole thing is so people understand this. I mean, my parents, they have, like, a massive amount of land, and if we didn't have hunters around there, I'm sorry, you need to understand this. We don't have enough euthanizing drugs for the animals. There needs to be hunters, and you need to deal with that. And it's really that simple.
Oh, there are so many fascinating fascinating pieces of data out there concerning bone analysis, you know, food bone analysis among the pre-European populations here. And what they were doing was they were managing, you know, they didn't necessarily have agriculture. No, they were lightly managing forests and lightly managing the wildlife population. You know, passenger pigeons are gone now; they're extinct. But passenger pigeons once literally would darken the sky for hours on end as the flock would fly across, you know, but you know what? There's no evidence of massive amounts of passenger pigeons in food middens in ancient populations, which means that they were probably not statistically present in the diet. And they're okay to eat.
Yeah, yeah.
So what was happening is you had wildlife management. And you've just kind of got to, or you will get eaten out of house and home.
And that's the whole point. I mean, it needs to be, it can't be beaten back, Bob. That's what I'm saying. It can't be beaten back. And a lot of times,